Hey, everybody. Welcome to the WrestleCast, episode 32. This is 32, right, Wayne?
Yep, 32. It was.
32, episode 32. We had a little technical difficulties in episode 32, so keep tossing, improve, get a cut. Wayne would like to now apologize.
I would like to apologize for my absolute major cock-up.
That's Wayne apologizing. So we're going to do a little intro here with me, DRG, and Wayne after the fact. And then on the panel this week, we have Wayne as a baker, as we all know. Katie the First Lady, Dan the Cannon. I always like to do that with Dan's name. Heavyset and Chevy is a little bit. He's on there for a little bit, but he had to go attend some things. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Have a wonderful week.
You guys gonna whack it together?
Yeah, you want
to. Gonna, what car?
The stranger.
We cross swords, mate. Right, we're going to start the show with Keep, Toss, and Improve. We had originally done it with the rest of the group, but unfortunately, I went and lost it, and it's gone to the great podcast in the sky. So what I'm going to do is we're going to do a little blag with me and Devil Vamp now. So what would your Keep, Toss, and Improve be for this week, Devil?
This week definitely would be... Toss would be getting rid of Knight of Champions.
Until this really? You didn't love it?
No. I didn't even like it. I stood for it. What did everybody say? I guess I have to go back and listen to my email part then. Yeah, I forgot I emailed. Knight of Champions was just not that good. It just wasn't. There was a couple of good matches, but not worth the time that I put into it to watch it. It really wasn't. That's pretty much all I have, honestly. It's
for me, it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad either, considering the dross we had the month of Raws before, and I don't think we got punched that badly. I think that come out all right, considering the build-up. It was never going to be a good event for me.
Yeah, no. That's why I wasn't that worried about missing this pay-per-view, because I did not really put any effort into caring about this pay-per-view at all. Like, it was one of those where I was just like, okay, yeah, we all know Brock Lesnar's going to leave. We all know this is going to happen. And, I mean, I got... How many points did I get, by the way? I know you probably went over it more. Anyway, I did pretty good. I know I missed one, but I did pretty... I missed two, but I did pretty good. So, I mean, I don't know. I just didn't like it. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't surprising. It didn't feel like a pay-per-view, which I think the more and more of these special events because of the network are not going to feel like pay-per-views anymore. They're just not. And that's just the fact of life. I'm sorry. And I think mentioning how much people paid for the pay-per-view is a good thing. I think it's going to get them to stop paying $59 for a damn pay-per-view every single month and go to the WWE Network. And then slowly, once they get their numbers up, they'll be able to put more money into the special events instead of having to share profits with pay-per-view dollars, in my opinion.
So what was your favorite match of the night of Night Champions? And if you had a gun against your head and you had to choose a good match?
See, I would say Miz and Ziggler, but Miz and Ziggler was ruined by Georgia Florida Line. And you
I was
going
to say, that's my toss.
You guys will hear
it. We'll go into that now quickly.
Yeah,
my toss is the Miz match. That was one of the only feuds that actually had a build-up, and I was looking forward to.
So looking forward to it.
And then they fucked it up by turning it a bit Raw-like and gimmicky and advertising with Georgia, Florida, or Florida, Georgia, I don't know which way. It didn't work for me. It took away from the match, and I thought it was shit. I don't know what you thought.
All right, so I went on a tangent. I emailed second Spanish announce table, and I went on a fucking huge tangent about Georgia, Florida Line, and I'll give you a little bit of it here. These motherfuckers come on to my goddamn pay-per-view or my R network that I pay $9.99 a month for, and they want to talk shit and say nothing of importance during a match that I actually fucking care about. You can't come out during a bullshit match that no one cares about, like fucking Orton and Jericho. You have to come out during a Miz Ziggler match. Let's see how much more we can piss on the IC title. Okay? Fucking Vince and Triple H, get these motherfuckers off my goddamn network. I'm not paying $9.99 to hear Georgia Florida Line every time someone gets punched in the face go, oh, whoa, 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 boy, oh, oh, whoa. No, I don't give a fuck about your fucking country music. I don't give a fuck about you. I don't give a fuck if... Not to mention, both of you are fucking stone cold ugly. You guys couldn't be any more ugly if you got kicked in the face by a fucking horse. I'm sorry. You're just ugly. You don't need to be on my TV. You don't need to be on my fucking network. Get off. Stay off. Vince, don't have them on ever again. Ever fucking ever again. They're not popular. I don't give a fuck about country music. I hate it. I hate anyone that listens to it. It's bullshit. Stay off of my network.
Good, now you've alienated a load of our listeners. Yeah, I've got to agree with you, though. That really pissed me off, the way they handled that Miz match.
It really made me mad. Like, it really made me mad. I was watching it, and I was just steaming and wanting to talk to someone about it. Like, I was legitimately pissed that they had them out there during that match. I would even felt better if they would have had them during the Sheamus Cesaro match, because at least, you know, that's a brutal match, so that it's not a very technical match. You can talk during that match and still catch everything, you know what I mean? The Miz, Dolph, they're very technical wrestlers. You can't miss something. If you miss something, you may miss something big with them, you know? They're so evenly matched, you never know when one of them's gonna win. So when you have two fuckheads outside of the ring talking bullshit about their fucking stupid goddamn album that's getting ready to come out, which nobody gives a fuck, and I hope nobody fucking buys it that watches the WWE, it ruins the whole thing. And it besmirches the fucking IC title. You're supposed to be talking about the IC champions, not fucking Georgia goddamn Florida Line.
Right. Now we're negative. We've both had two tosses. I'm going to go with a keep now. Mm. Keep, and this is really weird because it's about the same bunch of guys, but on the following night of Raw, keep Damian Sandow. That was my highlight.
Where is that? What is he doing
now? The only highlight on that Raw was him and his work outside the ring, especially the fucking figure of four when Miz put it on. And Sandow, you saw, was doing the arm actions like he was putting a figure of four on and then just fucking drops out of sight behind the ring. I thought it was fucking brilliant.
You just like the
Did
little...
you notice Sandow on the outside?
Yeah, but you just liked the little toy belt that he was carrying, didn't you?
Oh, that's fucking funny as well. The only thing, this one time I wanted R-Truth out there, actually, was to be out there to, snatch the toy belt away from him. I think that would have been quite amusing.
I think... For me, it's running low now. I think, don't get me wrong, I know they're adding good content to each and every day. I know they're doing good work with Sandow. I'm kind of done with it. I'm ready for Sandow to flip around and tell him to go fuck himself and turn back into Sandow. And I don't know where Sandow should go from here. I really don't. I really don't.
That's obviously going to be a turn, isn't it?
I hope so.
He'll turn on Miz, he'll go face and everything. So you'd say rather sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I know they're probably going to go all the way to WrestleMania with this by now. I mean, they've been going so long with it, so... Didn't they do this with the wrestler recently? They did it with Big Show.
In what way? Did what with the Big Show?
They did it with Big Show. Like, he came out as Pee Wee Herman. He came out as... He tried to rap like John Cena. He was trying to find his identity. Like, it's in Big Show's
yeah, but that's not the same as like the stunt double thing. That'll be Damian Sandow, and then he'll just turn on Miz one day, and he'll become his own character again. I think you'll find. But
okay. So what's the difference between a stunt double and having two Pee Wee Hermans in the ring? Except one just happens to be a giant, and then having two John Cena's in the ring. Nothing. There's no difference. They've already done this like within this generation. I'm just saying it's a little weird. And
you've managed to turn my keep into a negative.
I'm sorry.
Right, what was your keep for the week then, Devil?
My keep.
And try and make it so it don't go negative.
I know. My keep. I think I watched NXT this week. I did watch NXT this week. I don't know if I have a keep this week. Raw wasn't that bad. Raw actually wasn't that bad this week. I don't have much to complain about. Raw really wasn't that bad. I did fast forward through little parts. Nikki, I'm really actually digging Nikki lately. I'm going to have to agree with who said Nikki was good on the AWR. Somebody said on the AWR. I'm not sure who, but she did a really good job at Night of Champions. Again, horrible on the mic, horrible actress. I know all that. But she actually did a pretty good job on Raw, too. She was throwing AJ around for a good amount of time. Like, she was a little ragdoll. And, frankly, she should be because Nikki's a lot bigger than AJ is. She's a lot bigger than AJ is. So, what do you think about that, Wayne?
No, she definitely... Everyone kept saying she was going to lower the quality of the match. And for me, she really didn't. She really... I'm so glad she was there. Added a different dynamic to what we'd seen for the last two or three pay-per-views with Paige and AJ, and she didn't lower the quality at all. I don't mind her in the ring. I quite like her. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was because we lowered the bar so much, though? I don't know. You think so, maybe? Maybe? Just a little bit?
I just think she's better than her sister. I just can't get over her. I don't like Brie, full stop.
I don't like Brie either. I think Brie looks better than her, though.
Really?
She's got that tummy. She's got a nice little tummy on her.
Nikki's is much better. I'm sorry.
All right, you say so. Whatever.
How come all discussions involving me go to about women? I'm not like this in real life.
Yes, you are. It's not like you're drunk and you just mistakenly say stuff or whatever. The truth comes out in podcasting, my friend. That's all I'm saying. And you want to talk about Paige?
Yeah,
you want to talk
about
Paige's?
The King, Lola.
You want to talk about, yeah, I know you are. You want to talk about Paige's shorts real quick?
Oh, they're lovely. I got so excited when she uploaded them to Instagram with her new ring gear. I was so happy.
She put them on Instagram?
Yep. And she's put her new gloves on there.
Oh, she's such a little Instagram whore, isn't she?
She fucking loves it.
All right. That was Keep Tossing and Prove, you guys. And here, I'll let Wayne do it. Wayne, send us on out, man.
Well, I'm just going to add one more keep, and that is keep Paige's Instagram. But other than that, we'll go back into the main show that I recorded last night. And again, I'm really sorry for my fuck up, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Right, I think we're near enough done with Keep Tossing Prove. There's nothing really I want to add. I think you guys pretty much nailed everything that I'd have said. So we'll go on to Night of Champions and review that. We'll go through the matches and we'll add the points up from the picks from last week. So here we go. We'll start with the Intercontinental match. Well, we've already dabbled with that, so I don't think we need to really discuss it. So we'll just review the points. I done bloody terrible at this event, I'm not gonna lie.
It'd be funny if somebody who wasn't on won all the points this round.
No one. In fact, Rocky Mountain High, who's not on this week, done the best out of all of us, and he really didn't even watch any of the prep shows or nothing for it. He just went in with blind thoughts and pretty much nailed it.
Is that a pun intended?
No, but if he appreciates it, then yes. Right, so basically, the Intercontinental match, everyone said Dolph, bar Rocky Mountain High, who went Miz. So, can't believe that. I think Rocky Mountain High was just trying to be different, but he proper saw it. So, he gets a point for that, and all of us lose. We'll move on now to the US title match, which for me was the match of the night. What did you think of it, Chevy?
I mean, earlier in the summer, those two were going at it, and they were putting in a pretty good series of matches.
What did you think of the one last night? Not last night, but Night of Champions compared to it then? Do you reckon that equaled them?
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe the future of the U.S. title is a new age workman's belt, where it's just they give the title to people who can go and ring. While the Intercontinental title will be more about the feuds and stuff like we're seeing with Miz and Damian.
Yeah, they need to more defined roles of what they want from each champion. Heavy, what did you think of the US title match at Night Champions?
I mean, I liked it. I mean, I wish there was a better feud between the two, but I don't know if this title is any more for, you know, what these guys did in the ring, but it's just those two have styles that when they work together, you're gonna see this kind of action, and it's very stiff, and that's what makes these guys unique. So when you put them together, you get this kind of magic.
And Katie, what did you think?
I mentioned it earlier. I liked the match. It was very stiff. They took a lot of hard hits on each other, and it was good. They work well together. It's just you need something more with the US title.
Yeah. And well done to all you guys. You all said Sheamus. I said Cesaro like a dick. And so I'm a point down on you guys because you've all got one. So we'll move on to the... can't be bothered to do it in order. Divas title. Pretty much three people said Paige. That was Chevy, Katie and Vamp. And everyone else said Nikki and AJ Lee won. It said no one saw AJ Lee coming. Was that the right decision then, Katie? AJ Lee taking the title, or would you add someone else?
Well, I did want Paige to. I think if anybody needs the title now, it's Paige. Because, I mean, AJ has already been the longest reigning Divas champion, so I didn't see no reason for her to hold it. And if Nikki would have won, they probably would have gone in with her and Brie, but they didn't need it as well. So, I mean, I liked the match. I liked the triple suplex they did. I thought they all did pretty well.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match, and Nikki by no means let down the match. Everyone kept saying, oh, she'll drag quality down. I thought she was all right.
She was in there
she's
enough.
She's not bad in the ring.
She was in there enough, and then she was out when it was necessary.
So, you know, she didn't ruin. Everyone said that she'd piss up a good AJ and Paige match, but, you know, that was a good match. It was what it was, called out for the main event. Heavy, what did you think of the Divas match?
It was all right. I don't 100% agree maybe with the outcome. I would have liked to more see Nikki with the title because I don't think Paige or AJ Lee need it. But I'm interested going forward. And Katie, you say AJ Lee doesn't need the title. So that means if CM Punk ever came back, he wouldn't need to be WWE champion because he was champion long time.
Oh, that's a good one, Evie. Come on, Katie, reply.
Well, I don't think he would need the title, but I still think he would be a main eventer. To me, AJ doesn't need the title at this point. If she was going to win again, it wouldn't be at this moment. It would be down the road. I think Paige needs a title now to help make her more.
But when it comes down to the Divas division, I mean, how much making do you need? She's technically probably one of the most popular divas in the division, and she's only been around practically a cup of coffee. The only person in that division that's been on less time than her is Emma, but let's not even get into that.
Yeah, no.
But I would have much rather seen Nikki win or just somebody else outside of AJ Lee and Paige. You could have had that feud go on. You could have had the Divas title maybe bounce around for a couple months between two other people or just be in a feud with somebody else. And then Paige, after she beats AJ without the Divas title, goes back to claim her prize.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I was an advocate last week for that belt to go over to the Total Divas storyline with Brie and stuff, because the Divas belt started the rivalry between Paige and AJ, but they've more and picked it up and run with it. So I think the belt has done its job there. Build it up with someone else. Chevy, what do you think?
I'm about ready to see an end of the Paige-AJ rivalry. It's been going on for too long for my taste.
Who would you have them two go off with then?
I would honestly write Paige off of TV for a couple months.
No, not while she's got those new little short shorts.
Keep it in your pants, Wayne. Jeez.
That's the issue, which is, I mean, now the rivalry's been running for so long that the only way they can have new content in it is to add something sexual.
Yeah, but it works for pervs like me.
And when Kevin Dunn out the back. Do we see AJ going with Stephanie in the future?
That is, I think, what everyone wants, especially after the Brie-Stephanie match. I think to have then Stephanie move over to AJ, they've hinted at it twice now. I can't think of one person, if you had to book something for AJ, that would not say go on to Stephanie, because their promos and everything would be stunning.
Yeah, if Stephanie's going to have another match, it should be against AJ.
Here's the question, though. Do we see it happen before WrestleMania or at WrestleMania? I'm saying WrestleMania.
I would say WrestleMania
too.
Something that is that big needs a build, and unfortunately we're just that out of the window to build to it quite yet. You just drop in the odd hints about once or twice, you know, over a couple of months, and that will hopefully start building nice with January at Royal Rumble.
That's the great thing. I was going to say, in my opinion, the great thing about WWE this time of year is if they have a match that they know they're going to have at WrestleMania, they will find ways to drop hints. And it seems like the past couple weeks, we have gotten that with Stephanie and AJ Lee, of even the fact of, you know, give me the title, and AJ Lee just kind of glares at her but, you know, hands the title over and smiles. And that's just the subtle hints that WWE will put down. I love it.
Well, they were hinting towards it a year or so ago, weren't they, when Stephanie come out and AJ interrupted a promo to cut one herself, and Stephanie told her to shut up like that, and said, if you ever interrupt me again, I will, like, punish you and stuff like that. And they never followed it up then. I really feel like they missed a boat then.
I think that was just more getting people ready to see Stephanie McMahon on TV more. Because that was right before she started being on pretty much every Raw. Because she pretty much came back from TV obscurity to cut that promo, to talk about Money in the Bank. And then as soon as SummerSlam happened, she started being on TV all the time.
Yeah, because the authority.
Hopefully that's where they're going to go with it, though. So basically, no one saw that result coming. Moving on to Rusev and Henry. Basically, Devil Vamp was the only one that said Henry. Shows what he knows. everyone said Rusev. It's not a shock. But how good was Henry with the cry before, with the Garcia anthem? And was it me, or was it just sweat? It might just be me looking far too hard into it. Was he crying when the accolade was on?
I think so. I think there's one tear coming out of his eye.
I don't know. I think he was probably thinking about Mae Young, and he just started crying. you made the whole joke of, was it Chevy made the joke about Global Force Wrestling. To me, this will be in my tweet the tables of that was a moment, the national anthem being in the middle of a show. Now that is a GFW note that they're probably doing.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. We're going to get a We the People in a minute, are we?
Oh, well, now that you mention it, sure. We the people.
I like the way Katie didn't lower herself to your two standards. But
part of We the People.
She's American. She can be.
We the people.
Would you like to be a part of it, Katie?
I thought she was from England, according to Devil Vamp, before she got on the show.
We're not utilizing Vampy not being here enough, are we, to be honest? We should be like pointing out all these flaws as he can't reply. Damn, we're missing an opportunity.
I should be the one doing it, because every time I'm not here, the little motherfucker, well, him and DRG, they run their mouth, so maybe I should start poking in little jokes about them.
I do think it's unfair that when you're not here, Heavy, that they do put words in your mouth and make you say stuff that you never actually said. I do think it's quite amusing.
At least I listen, so you're not going to get away with it unless you edit it out, or Devil edits it out. But he don't.
No, this is staying in there, so Devil knows his place. But basically, no big shocker. Everyone got a point bar Devil Vamp. So, I don't think there's a lot to talk about. Rusev will move on. We've already said that we all reckon he's going to move on to Cena. So we'll go on to the tag team match. Not bad. Usos, their matches are fairly similar. I think that was the right decision to move the belts over to Dust. Basically, Vamp, Rocky Mountain High, Heavy, and Katie all said Dust. Well, I said Usos, so I'm a loser again. So you all lot get 1 point.
You so crazy.
What did you think of the tag match, Heavy?
I thought it was okay. I do like seeing what we are seeing with Dusty's Dust, them being crazy and everything. Just with Cody Rhodes and Dust and Goldust, no one has seen coming, and that's one of the greatest things about this team it was all about as soon as they got together, oh, they're going to break up. They're going to get this. We're going to get this feud that we want, blah, blah, blah. But they keep putting it off. Well, if they ever actually going to do it, but they still make it entertaining. Throw this new character for Cody Rhodes, and I think strapping them was the smart idea. And I'm curious to see what they do with the titles now.
Katie, you agreed with him on the picks. Do you agree with him now?
Yeah, I'm happy they won the titles. I really liked how Goldust did his makeup in the match. He does it like differently.
I noticed that. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah, and the match was what it was. It was good. I'm happy they did the title switch. I'm excited to see what happens from here on.
And we'll move on to you, Chevy, as you influence me with your fucking ascension idea.
How
is that what you do?
How was that, Chevy? Usos, they were going to drop the belts to the ascension.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Well, I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Heavy acts like I'm going to argue with him and try to defend my prediction.
Chevy, what's done's done. We're wrong. Would you agree with what they've done now, though? Would you say that's the right thing, or would you carry on and say they should have probably kept with the Usos?
Usos' run was definitely getting stale. I would argue that I would have rather see the championship move over to the Wyatt family, but it was time to get the title moved. And I think you could see some really good action out of Dusty's Dust, especially if they like spray painted the titles to look like their face paint up every week and came out with them.
I'd like a bit more customization of the belts, just any belt. Yeah. I don't think there's enough of that at the moment. I know they went for a fad of doing that a lot, but I'd like that. That's a good idea.
Who was the last person to do it besides Cena? No.
The Miz.
Can we count this? Does that really count?
No.
Hey, I was about to say, taking the centerpiece and going, you know what? Turn it 180 degrees, boom, customization. But Edge was the last one I could think of.
Yeah, it's Edge. You had Rock. You've had Stone Cold. I know they're not right together, but you've had customization and
Cena was obviously the biggest one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We ain't had it for like years. I think it's about time someone. Last time was in TNA with that fucking Jeff Hardy belt. Don't get me started.
Let's not talk about that, because we're not talking about the dumb decisions that TNA has pulled in the past. It's all about now, right, DRG?
We've got a DRG email coming heavy, so we're going to have to go to TNA some point. Right, we'll move on now to the Jericho-Orton match, which everyone shat on. Which is going to be, oh, toilet break, go boring. But actually was up there for one of the better matches for me. I don't know what you guys thought, and everyone said Orton. That was the one or two predictions I got right, and I put a point on that, so I get two for that. Was it worth doing in the end, basically, I'll ask, and was it the right outcome? And we'll go with Chevy.
Originally, I would have said no, but retroactively, now that that Roman Reigns was scratched, it probably was a good idea, because it gave him... gave him some filler on the card to help fill up time that was missing.
Did you like it?
It was decent. They did kind of sucker me into thinking that Randy Orton was going to win with the punt kick. And a lot of people were predicting that, but I mean, I'm a Randy Orton fan, so he did a decent performance.
Boy, that's a shocker.
We'll go with you then, Heavy. What were your thoughts of the match?
You know what? Chris Jericho being on the Peep Show and having a little back and forth with...
Don't get me started on that pre-show. That was bad.
But, no, the Peep Show, the back and forth between Randy and Jericho with Christian being there, like, that entertained me. And I think what got me was the little Terrence and Phillip line. And I was thinking, like, oh, my God, Orton, that's the funniest you've been in a long time. Who wrote that? Hire them to write for you and only you. Because that was excellent.
That's certainly better than the "It's the season premiere" from the other Raw, which is cringe for me. Katie, what were your thoughts of the Orton Jericho match, and was it worth doing?
Yeah, because I agree with what Chevy said. It was a filler spot without Roman Reigns there, and the match was pretty decent. You know, it was a good way to write Jericho off for however many months he's going to be gone. So I liked it.
All right, I think we pretty much all agreed with that one. Let's see what's left. I think we pretty much hit all the matches. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns obviously never happened, but we'll go with the segment that replaced it. Did you enjoy it? Heavy? Do you reckon that was well done, bringing Ambrose back the way he did?
Okay. Now that I'm not dropped off from the call and I seem to be holding on pretty steady, crossing my fingers, that I loved that how he came back and everything. It was very, very Stone Cold-esque. And it was the pop was very similar to what Stone Cold would have got early in his career. And he's right now probably number four on the top faces in WWE, at least top five. And the three that I would definitely put above him is Roman Reigns, John Cena, and Daniel Bryan. And two of them are out right now. So that puts him in very good presence. But coming back, was it predictable? Yes, but it was still fun. Dean Ambrose brings that with his character. And it was freaking awesome.
Sometimes, though, predictable is the only way you can go, and that's a ready-done rivalry that they never really fully exploit the first time round, so that's the way they had to go, and that was the easy way of bringing him back. And also, there's a bit on this on the rumour mill section, so we'll come back to that bit. Chevy, did you like the Dean Ambrose return?
Technically, Seth Rollins did win with his new finisher, the forfeit.
He does seem to be getting a lot of those finishes at, like that at the moment. Well, it's two, but so Katie, did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I think once we saw Seth Rollins come out and talk about getting a forfeit, we kind of knew he was Dean Ambrose was going to show up, because I think the crowd was waiting for it, and he came back in a big way, so I thought it was great.
He was always going to come back straight in that rivalry. I think what they were going to go and do was going to have a piss Roman Reigns off, and they were going to have a triple threat in a Hell in a Cell Shield, the Shield match everyone wanted, but obviously because of the injury that never happened. But joining us now, Mr. We Can Review himself, we've got Dan the Man Cannon.
Oh, the other one.
No, not just the self-absorbed person, but no, we've actually got the main man himself. Dan, we're now talking about Night of Champions. What were your thoughts of the event as a whole?
Well, it's funny timing, because I just took some crap from Cataclysmic on Twitter saying that I need to be more positive. And I'm like, dude, I've been positive for like 6 years. I'm allowed to vent every now and again. I just wasn't pleased with it. It's just...
Hold on. Cata, here's what I want you to do. I know you're fairly new to everything. Go back to 2011. Go back to around the fall. Dan was a lot more negative back then. So trust me, you are definitely getting a more positive Dan.
Yes, I could be a hell of a lot more cynical. And it was only being transformed through listening to everybody else complain on a weekly basis. I had to play the positive role, and somehow I brainwashed myself in the process. But every now and again, even I can't contain it anymore. And I just have to say, and get it out of my system. I mean, there was a lot of great things that came out of it. But my ultimate point throughout the show was that it just playing it too safe for my preference. But whatever, I don't want to hold the show up. I could complain all night. All in all, it was a middle-of-the-road pay-per-view, period.
No, that's exactly where I sat. Nothing bad, but there weren't nothing great either. You're never going to go back and watch it. And but saying that, with the Raws leading up to it, which I thought the worst bunch of Raws ever, I don't think we got that bad a show out of it, but that's my opinion. The whole event was just meh. But like Heavy said, the wrestling calendar isn't built around this time of the year. It's built around January to April. So the building blocks are being put there. We've got one match left of the picks. Everyone said Brock. So no one gets points for that. What did you guys think of the main event? Was it the way to go? Or would you actually add a decisive finish? And we'll go with Heavy.
Oh, one more time.
Basically, everyone said Brock for the main event. Would you have chose the ending that they did in the end, or would you have had a decisive finish and actually had Brock or Cena win?
It depends. If they're trying to lead into a Hell in a Cell match between Brock and Cena, then fine. I'm 100% for it. I'm not 100% sure if that's the route they're trying to go, but to me, that would be a way to extend the feud to this next pay-per-view that happens to be Hell in a Cell, and that's the way they can finally end it, with a big cage being around the ring and a roof on the top so no one's going to get in and all this kind of stuff. And that would be the true way to end it. If they don't go that direction, it's one of those things actually I'd have to like go back and look at later on down the road to see where they go from here. Because, I mean, that's the big difference.
I think the frustrating thing is we've had one Raw now and we're no further in just seeing where they're going to go with it. I think there would have been, if we'd have got some answers on that Raw, that would have made it a lot better. Chevy, was the ending they chose for Night of Champions the correct one or not?
It was too weird, too sloppy, but then again, the whole match was booked really weird with, it just seemed to fall apart. There were, you know, as they pointed out, the four AAs just seemed ridiculous and unnecessary. I don't know if originally that segment was supposed to play out different with Roman Reigns, maybe, and they didn't want to like pull Seth Rollins out of it after the injury or what, but it just seemed maybe not the most thought out, and the execution was a little all over the place, and it seems a little weird because the Authority backed Brock Lesnar winning the championship, but yet Seth Rollins goes to cash in on him and the Authority couldn't care less.
I was going to say, I'd like to, if they're going to hint at it, that the Authority saw that Cena was going to win and pushed Rollins out to do it. I'd like that angle, but they could still go to that. Dan, how would you have booked the ending of Night of Champions?
I think you have to look long-term in a scenario like this. With Hell in the Cell right around the corner, you can't just throw a Hell in the Cell match out there. It has to be the definitive conclusion of a grudge match and a grudge feud. And this is the perfect finishing nail for the Cena-Lesnar feud. And I think they've known that all along, because let's ask ourselves one honest question. Who else can fill those shoes at Night of Champions in 5 weeks to build towards a match that has enough animosity that culminates at Hell in a Cell? John Cena is the only guy, especially with Roman Reigns down. So you got to ask yourself, how do we get to that match? We could either let John Cena go over and let it be a true rubber match where he takes the title back and then Brock wins it back, or we can protect the title and have a shitty finish for the end of this match and then get the final payoff at Hell in a Cell. So overall, we're really going to have Brock not losing to John Cena for 3 straight pay-per-views. So I think mission accomplished, and this is the match that's going to suffer because of it. But the next one should be pretty damn good.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that's exactly why I've always said I don't want a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell, because I always used to love when you had a Raw and a rivalry had gone 3 or 4 months and the person goes in the ring, I want to settle this in a Hell in a Cell match, and the crowd used to fucking roar, and I so miss that, because, you know, the only Hell in a Cell matches are going to be at now at the pay-per-view, and they've got to shoehorn rivalries into it, but that's a whole new kettle of fish, so... At the end of the day, they've got a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell. That's the way it is. Nothing we can say is going to change it. I think, like I said, I think that was because Shield rivalry was meant to be the one that they were going for, but it's been buggered up now. So obviously, they're now going to try and do Brock Lesnar, John Cena as the showpiece for it. Katie, what were your thoughts for the end of Night of Champions?
Well, looking back at the ending of it, how it ended in DQ, I assume that Cena and Brock will be in the Hell in the Cell, and I would assume that there'll be at least another Hell in the Cell with Ambrose and Rollins. The match itself was okay. I knew Cena would probably get more offense this time around, but I am hoping there's a Hell in the Cell match between the two, because I think that is the final match between them of who gets to be the champion.
Right then, who goes over is the main question.
Lesnar.
That's a good question.
It does seem weird that if... It seems weird that if they were to have the next fight at Hell in a Cell, that Brock Lesnar couldn't wait the 24 hours to show up to Raw after the pay-per-view.
Yeah, was it a good decision, though, Chevy, as well, ask you this, not to have Heyman on as well?
Depends. If Brock Lesnar's at the next pay-per-view, then the story needed to be progressed somehow. If he's not going to be at the next pay-per-view, then you want people forgetting about it.
So that certainly looks that way. And the rumor I've heard is Survivor Series is next appearance. Carry on, Chevy.
I was going to throw in that I had heard that Paul Heyman was scheduled for Raw, but his appearance was cut. And I don't know if it was cut for time restraints or the fact that they were writing the show at last minute or whatnot. But he was supposedly scheduled to be on the show, but... end up not being.
Could be it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Thing is, you can let him off this time because of, obviously, the Roman Reigns injury, so fair enough.
Well, I think Heyman will definitely right, be so... next week. They're in Chicago.
Oh.
God.
For once, though, I didn't even know that Chicago one was coming up, actually, so luckily the CM Punk rumors are dying down, finally.
They got it. Right. Who the hell would want to go to Chicago?
If you were WWE, would you just not throw AJ up this next week?
That's interesting. How would you use AJ next week then, Chevy?
If I was WWE, I would just borderline be like, hey, do you want a week off? I mean, it's good to give wrestlers a week off, and who knows how long they'll chant CM Punk after she shows up.
Right, we'll go to Mr. Chicago at Heart himself, Dan. Would you... I think I know your answer anyway. Would you use any of the CM Punk stuff next week or AJ, or would you just literally like not use AJ or anything?
Here's what I'm saying about wrestling right now. I'm sick of playing it safe. That's it. And this is a perfect breeding ground for controversy. And I think next week is actually the perfect time to pull the trigger on AJ Lee and Stephanie McMahon, simply because of the reaction it's going to get. Stephanie will be in that ring as a straight villain going up the AJ CM Punk chant, which you can embrace for one segment. It makes sense. It feeds into the storyline, and Stephanie could even use it. This is a great job to say, don't sue us, AJ. We'd hate for that to happen. Play into it. Create a moment. Give people something to talk about. I want to see them swing for the fences. Use your proximity. And I think feeding into the CM Punk bullshit for one segment is worth its weight in gold, and it will be one of those memorable moments that we can play on a post-show promo 5 years from now. I think don't back away from it. Walk into it and just let it play out organically. Make a damn moment.
I agree.
Well, you stuck your fingers up at me because I really thought you were going to say, why you fucking bring up CM Punk? He's not relevant anymore. So, fair play.
That's exactly what I was going to say, actually.
Well, fair enough. Yes, you say it like that. Perfect. It will generate heat. Chicago will support AJ Lee just purely because of who she's married to. That's a perfect chance. You know Stephanie's going to get booed. That's perfect, actually.
To me, no matter where they are, they're still going to say his name wherever she shows up. And even with Stephanie, I think they'll have no choice but to bring him up if they're going to go in that route with Stephanie and AJ.
Yeah, Heavy, what are your thoughts? You're bound to have an opinion.
Well, it's like what I was saying earlier of I think the AJ Lee-Stephanie feud should wait till WrestleMania. And given as much time as there is between right now and WrestleMania, I'm pretty sure they will be back in Chicago by then, at least during sometime on the road to WrestleMania from January to March. So, yeah, tap into it then. They can back away from it this time. I mean, it's not like Chicago between now and then is going to forget who CM Punk is and forget who he's married to.
Yeah, I suppose. No, I think because Raw is so slow at the moment, I think that would give you a talking point for next week, just a kick boot for this period of the year. So, yeah, well, we'll see next week. Well, you can pretty much put money on that they're not going to do anything.
Is AJ Lee and Stephanie something that can drag out? As soon as you actually start to make moves on it. I mean, granted, like right now they're dropping subtle hints, and subtle hints can last for a while. But as soon as you do a confrontation, that would mean this match needs to happen before the end of the year.
Not necessarily. Just do a subtle hint with the Chicago crowd.
But no, if what you're wanting isn't a subtle hint, you're wanting something big in on of bringing in CM Punk's name. You want an altercation. You don't want an altercation just yet. Because if that does happen next week, and it does drag to WrestleMania, people are going to be bitched because it's stagnant. No, all this stuff. But that's a WrestleMania match that you want.
Stephanie, the way you could book it, which would generate the heat, exactly like everyone said, but not cause a full front reaction, is somehow Stephanie gets dragged out in the Divas feud. They have an altercation in the ring, blah, 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 blah. I don't know, Stephanie makes a comment about picking your ball up and walking away in a stressy or whatever. and everyone will know that's directed at CM Punk, and then a crowd would start, and then you could have AJ Lee say a smarky little comment or something, and then Stephanie just does the "shut up" like that, and just leave it as that again. Don't have to have a face-to-face or anything, just Stephanie going a little bit Vince, and just leave it as that for a few months or a couple months or whatever.
And I'm not even say his name. The fans are going to do that for you. I'm just saying, wet their whistle. Like, they give them what they want so they can sabotage and hijack one segment. And if I know Chicago fans like I think I do, they'll be happy with that and move on with the rest of the show. That's the bet I made on the Week in Review, is I give the fans one segment to go all CM Punk and that's it. They should know better, and if it goes on any longer, I'm going to be in a bad place.
Exactly, just the toys out of a pram comment, yeah, or something like that, exactly, from Stephanie, and everyone will know who that's about, especially when it's directed at AJ Lee. That would be enough without going overboard on it. Right, I think that's pretty much everyone's opinion of Night of Champions and everything, so we'll move on to the, I've got to say, fantastic feature, what I come up with, Water Cooler Talk, which is basically like a rumour mill thing, where we run through rumours and we just quickly say if they're going to happen or not, or if they're just stupid, etc. So we'll move on to this, and first one that I've come up with is Baron Corbin seems prominently squashed CJ Parker at the last TakeOver Live special and on last week's NXT, is supposedly in line for a big push. He's been working longer matches at house shows and been let loose on social media to build his character for a larger role on the network show. Basically, can you see Baron Corbin being like the next big NXT push, or do you think that's a bit like premature to say that? And we'll go with Katie.
Well, to be honest, I haven't watched NXT all that much, so I really couldn't tell you.
I chose the wrong person.
Sorry.
That's fine. Dan, I know you watch NXT. Baron Corbin, do you think he's going to be pushed?
Oh, the push has already begun, my friend. Absolutely. A couple of pop and squashes. I like the approach, too, at TakeOver by allowing CJ Parker to have, like, his 60-second entrance. He just comes out and ends the match in less than that. But I always ask when I see, because this is the first time I've ever seen him. I don't know what he's done before NXT. And whenever I see someone for the first time, I always say, does he pass the eye test? Does he just get over on looks alone? And that's an emphatic yes. The guy just pops off your television screen without saying a word. He's got a good look. He's agile for his size. He's, what, 6'8", 300? He's a big freaking dude. He's young. He's got a good look to him. He's confident. I think we're looking at something here. Big deal.
You think he could be the next big NXT project then?
I think he could be like, I don't want to get like way too ahead of myself, but I think we're looking at a flash in the pan here in a good way. Something's flashing and I'm very interested. Like when you first saw Brock Lesnar down in Ohio Valley, same thing. Now I'm not saying he's Brock, but he just popped right off your television screen like, yeah, that guy's got it. And that's how I look at this kid is. And maybe I'm just believing the hype, but I just like what I see.
But what hype? Because, well, there's hype, don't get me wrong, but the way I meant it was, I like the fact that they're keeping him doing a little as possible after the match. He's winning. He won the two matches and he just goes and it's done. And I'm loving that. He just wins a match, referee raises his arm, he just walks down the ramp. And I think less is more with him.
Yeah, kind of like a Goldberg-y approach.
Yeah, brilliant. Heavy, have you been catching NXT and what do you think about him?
Yes, we didn't do the what's on, where we've been watching, blah, 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 but I've actually caught up a little bit.
No, I'm doing that as part of the next feature, so don't worry, okay. We'll come to it.
But I watched Breakthrough Part 2 and the last week's episode, and to me, this guy screams they should change his name a little, give him a Coca-Cola tattoo, a G.I. Joe tattoo on the other arm, and call him BC Punk.
Shit, homie.
I'd go AD Punk, but that's just me.
This is what they always want to see him Punk to look like, a big dude with muscles. It's like even better for them.
You really see that heavy CM Punk in him already at this premature stage?
His look just reminds me of CM Punk. It's the tattoos and the grit that's behind it. To me, it was just like debuting him, winning the match. I'm just like, this guy is CM Punk 2.0, but not like in a bad way, like, oh, you know them at a CM Punk. But it's just like kind of saying, fuck you, we can find someone else to take your place that looks similar to you, but like, it'll get the fans going. And I haven't heard of many bad things about him yet, but then again, that's yet.
Real quick, I think Renee Young put it really well in his initial debut. So he looks like he's straight out of a Hot Topic store. And that's the look. He's generic Hot Topic. I agree. It needs to be adjusted, all that, but just on raw talent.
Got one question to ask the group, and that's Katie. Can he steal your heart like CM Punk or not?
Baron Corbin fan?
That's debatable. We'll see.
But is the potential there, Katie? That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. We'll be watching NXT this week. I do have the network now, so.
For only $9.99.
Yep.
Right, we'll move on then. We'll go rumors of WWE versus the audience continued at Night of Champions. This time, it was apparently pro Cesaro signs that were confiscated. A report floating around says the guy facing the hard camera side in El Generico mask handed out Kings of Wrestling signs. WWE officials took them from fans. They're said to have responded to the inquiries about why folks couldn't have the signs by saying, "You don't need to know. Let the conspiracy theories about Cesaro begin." Do you reckon this is absolute bullshit, or do you reckon that WWE are trying to control the fans too much? We'll go with Dan. Dan?
Yeah, I'm
shit, sorry, I didn't realize you called me. My bad.
Do you think WWE are trying to control fans by messing around with their signs?
Yeah, for sure. And rightfully so. I mean, they're trying really hard to manufacture some heat for his character. They even took away his swing. I mean, they're trying everything to get this guy over as a heel. And when people continually bring signs, it undermines them. Doesn't mean I agree with it at all. I think it's ridiculous. Embrace his backing, period. I mean, listen to the fans. I mean, don't dictate to them. Allow them to dictate to you. And that's how you make good characters. I think it's a really bad mistake.
I was going to say, it worked with WrestleMania 30, didn't it? With Daniel Bryan, they listened to the fans, and one of the most memorable main events, or main events outcomes, I should say. So you fully believe that these rumors are true, that WWE only let the signs on that they want?
It wouldn't be the first time, right?
Nah, definitely. Heavyset?
I think there's a difference. There's a difference between writing the normal type of sign, and then when you're acknowledging their past and everything, you know, King of Wrestling and all. I mean, that's more of a nod to everything Claudio Castagnoli, and WWE has done their best to back away from that. So if I got the story correct, they took away the signs, did they have them move, or did they stay?
It says confiscated, so I take it the signs the bloke was handing out were took away full stop.
It was like this. It was like a Cesaro section. Remember how multiple people had the same sign?
Yeah.
They had signs and distributed them throughout the crowd. So multiple people were going to hold up the same time in sync.
I was making sure they weren't moved, because I had heard rumblings of this story, but I didn't get anything concrete. Because I think it was pointed like, well, the guy has an El Generico mask. Are you going to have him move, or are you going to have him take off the mask? Because that's a callback to Sami Zayn in ROH and all that. I'm perfectly fine with them taking away signs like that, because that's the smarky crowd being smarks. And if you're going to have a sign like "Go Cesaro" and blah, 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 WWE, I don't think they'll take that away from you. But you call him Claudio, and you try to do that, well, I'm smart wrestling fan, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to have Claudio Castagnoli and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, WWE's going to take that kind of stupid stuff away, because that's you wanting to get attention.
Yeah, but a lot of the crowd do that with Husky Harris chants. That's exactly what, I can't remember what podcast said it. It was like, what do you want? Yeah, well done. Do you want well done because you watched a product in 2011? That you're always going to have fans that are just being dicks. And I don't blame WWE for trying to not let that affect the product today.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, chants are one thing. Chants are something that wrestling fans are going to chant anything, and it's harder for WWE to control that unless they go back and edit. But signs is something that once they see it, they can't take it away, because I've seen the whole Kings, because I believe it said King of Wrestling. I mean, granted, that's still a callback to ROH and everything, and I'm thinking, why do you have that sign? It's not like Chris Hero is down at NXT and waiting to be called up.
Yeah. Right, I think we've done that one. We'll go on to... There's two for this one, so I'll combine them. Basically, one is a rumour that Gail Kim's not having her contract renewed, and the second one is the greatest man that ever lived, Austin Aries, may be the latest person out the door at TNA. As we mentioned yesterday with Gail Kim, A-Double's contract is up soon. He may not be resigned, probably because he costs too much, or he can make more money on his own bookings. He announced recently that he'll be working House of Hardcore on November 15th, but that doesn't mean he's leaving the TNA fold as Tommy Dreamer's promotion, and Tommy Dreamer has been working with Dixie Carter and a lot in the last year. So we'll combine the two. Gail Kim, Austin Aries, can TNA afford to lose these two talents, or is it vital that they try and get him re-signed? And we'll go with Dan.
If they're going to use Austin to his utmost, if not, he's like the last guy you want disgruntled in your locker room. He's one of those guys where either he's kind of like a CM Punk, where you either want to make him happy or he's going to make everyone miserable. And I don't know, if you want that and you're ready to use it, then yes. If not, then just cut his ties and let him go, because he desperately needs the flies in his prime right now. And Gail Kim, I mean, what can she do that she hasn't done already? I hate to say that about a legend, but I mean, she's done everything she can do, and I guess they could live without her. They'd rather not, but they can do without her.
That's interesting, because my gut instinct is that's two stars you could really build around and vital for me. But how many times have we said that in the last year with TNA and the amount of people they've let go, yet they're doing a hell of a good run of impacts at the moment, so...
That are pre-recorded.
Dan said a point the other week that was spot on, and I think that was to actually my call. The pre-record is making TNA pre-plan and actually do stuff which they've never done before. How many times did they do these clusterfuck bookings week to week? And these pre-records are making them dedicate themselves to stuff. And that's a fair point. I like that. I just don't like the way they're treating Bound for Glory. I think that's becoming like one of their one-night-only pay-per-views. It's seriously looking that way for me. But that's a whole different kettle of fish. And I think we're getting into that with DRG later. So,
one quick counterpoint, though, is haven't they done pre-recording before? And they were complete shit because they didn't have the fans' reactions to gauge it on from show to show. They were just doing all these shows in a row, and they didn't get to experience that week-to-week thing to help change little bits and pieces they needed.
Counterpoint to that is, though, Heavy. The weekly show is working. It's enjoyable. It's getting a lot of praise. It's just whether or not how that will fit around the pay-per-view, considering they've already recorded some post impacts around that pay-per-view. But that's the only way we're going to find out, is by watching Bound for Glory and see how that all fits in. From what I've heard, the post-impact Bound for Glories have not gone down too well because of the title change and situation, but that's heading into spoiler land, so we better not go much further into that.
I love spoilers.
Yeah, and DRG will hand my ass to me if I go any further with that comment. So,
I'm just happy to make Brittany the new Knockouts champion. Oh, my bad.
Is you better not have done a spoiler. I really hope you're trolling us.
I don't know. You're going to have to watch to find out.
He's trolling.
Katie, you got anything to say, or are you still not that bothered because it's TNA?
You guys know more about TNA than I do. I mean, I try to watch, but things just come up. So you guys are more of the experts. I'll just listen to you guys.
To try and involve you, though.
I know, I appreciate
that. Don't like anyone being left out.
Involved. I'm trying to watch everything, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to leave you out, so we'll get you involved. With the Bound for Glory, biggest pay-per-view of the year, blah, blah, blah. They've had to do some pre-records of the shows after the event. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a good idea, or really shouldn't they have not done that?
Well, I didn't doing pre-recorded stuff, I guess it's been working for them. I've heard they've been having good shows, so I think it works.
Yeah, fair enough. There's not a lot more we can go with that unless we start spoiling stuff, so we'll leave it there.
And I'll just throw this out there. A very wise man once told me that spoilers only tell you half the story. True storytelling.
Oh, here we go.
The true storytelling is how to get there. Everybody knows how the Lord of the Rings is going to end, but you still watch it to the story.
Yep.
Told me by Ethan Carter III. Oh, hold on. I dropped that name. Let me go pick it up.
Heavy, did you hear me on second shift the other week when I name dropped you and said that story and everyone was like overwhelmed by the emotion of it?
No, I did not.
There we go. You don't listen to second shift then, do you? Well done. Thanks. Moving on to the...
Did you listen to NFL moving on to the... Or did you just have Ant tell you when I mention you?
Okay, I listened to the one episode because I was told I was on it. But that's not the point. Next rumour.
Let's talk about
it's being said that Dean... Oh, I say Cena.
That time you do.
I don't say Cena.
I will find audio where it doesn't sound like you say Cena. Like Cena.
Shut your ginger face. Right. It's being said that Dean Ambrose was always going to return last night to attack Seth Rollins. It was just a matter of how they would get there. Roman Reigns having emergency surgery, while incredibly unfortunate, paved the way for the version of the events we saw last night. There was even a script written up before Reigns' surgery that had the match never taken place, according to The Observer, so that must be true. So basically, do you think that Roman Reigns' injury affected the course of action, or do you reckon Ambrose is always going to be coming back or not? And we'll go with Heavy.
I was told that you shut my ginger face.
Oh, for God's sake. Bless your little cotton socks. Come on, what do you think about... Do you reckon what they were doing with the Dean Ambrose thing is going to be pretty much what they were always going to do, or not?
He said, bless your little cotton socks, bro. That's awesome.
I mean, I believe that... That probably was the plan the whole time, but I think it was everything was going to happen on Raw, but that just kind of like bumped it up because supposedly he was going to be done. He was already done with the movie, shooting and all that shit. So he was going to be back for Raw. And even if he was going to be away for the movie for, one more day, say he was going to be up until Sunday, they definitely could have just fast tracked everything to get him back for these 2 days. And I mean, that's what sounds right to me. I mean, as soon as Reigns got it, had the surgery, when I got the notification about it, it just was so apparent that this was going to help fast track it.
Yeah, once the injury had happened, that was always going to be Dean Ambrose coming back. Dan, do you think that Ambrose was due to return on Raw, or do you reckon that was always going to be a clusterfuck on Night of Champions?
I mean, I think there were some altercations, but I think through and through the script, I think you said it earlier, they have a triple threat with the Shield and the Hell in a Cell, I think is exactly where they wanted to go. So where Ambrose was inevitably introduced, I don't know, it could have been the pay-per-view, it could have been Raw, but either way, he was going to be there. But I do think he's a gigantic beneficiary of circumstance. I mean, there's no mistake about the fact that Ambrose is arguably the number three face in the company right now who's active, maybe number two, depending on who's who.
I was going to say, it's not a lot of competition at the moment, is there, face? Was it on your top five heels, top five faces that you done a few weeks ago as the post-show promo? Was that the faces or the heels that you said were seriously lacking?
Yeah, it was definitely the faces. And yeah, Ambrose was up there. I mean, once I go on mute here, I could find it. I got my list on my phone, but he was certainly on there. He was probably already right around number five already. But, I mean, right now, outside of John Cena, who's next? Roman's gone. Daniel, gone. Who would you guys consider the number two face in the company right now?
Yeah, because I remember you said Sheamus is like four or something. You went, and he's booed every week at the moment because his character's become so star. And, and the fact that your top four, like, face is being booed says everything about the state of that side of your company. And I think it's a perfect point at the moment.
And he's got a good connection with the crowd. I mean, Ambrose has really found a way to sink his teeth into the WWE universe. They love the guy, and that's what you're looking for. If you're not sold as creative or powers that be, the response that he gets from the crowd is undeniable. When his hook hits, forget about it. When they saw him jumping out of that cab, the place went nuts. I mean, it could have been Stone Cold Steve Austin for all you knew. If you were blind, you may have thought so.
See, Dan wasn't even listening to the show earlier, and he's practically quoting things that I said.
There you have it.
Do you want metal heavy? But no, I was just going to say, though. Oh, what was I going to say?
I don't know.
The fact that Roman Reigns' injury, the one that can gain the most out of that is Dean Ambrose. If he can, in the next 2 or 3 months, which is the rumoured timeline for Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose puts in a shift, gets more over with the crowd than ever before, it will be him going to WrestleMania. It is the next 2 months is down to Dean Ambrose to get in there, get his foot in the door and get in the WrestleMania. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I think, honestly, Roman Reigns' injury, the best one to stand from it is Dean Ambrose. Dan?
You know what I would love to see, Wayne, is and someone asked me this on the Week in Review, and I wish I would have answered it this way, but an exclusive right here on the DSJMP, I would love to see Dean Ambrose, once he gets this shield, just rinses it out of his mouth, and we can finally turn the page, I would love to see him and Bray Wyatt in a feud, because I really do think that Dean has a much crazier side. We all know. I mean, anyone who knows his other characters, there's a dark, sinister side to his character. And I think Bray could unleash some of that. And we could really start to tell the story. For anyone who watches the Monday Night Wars, they did Mick Foley recently. And it wasn't until they did like a good sit-down interview with Mick that his character really got over on the next level. And I think Dean has such a great story to tell. If they found a place to insert it with a Bray Wyatt storyline and a really good payoff, that could be the way to go. Unless they're thinking about turning Bray face, which is a possibility too. But that's me deep off in the left field with it. Yeah, I mean, Dean is in line for some huge, prolific feuds at the top of the pay-per-view cards.
All right, we'll go with that Mick Foley idea then, Dan. Who is the person you'd have sitting beside him? Because obviously a lot of those Mick Foley interviews was JR and his chemistry with him. Who would be the person that you'd sit opposite Dean Ambrose to do those interviews?
I think I'd do Renee Young. I mean, I love Renee Young right now.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
Would you bring in the relationship between them then?
Would you say?
Would you bring in the rumored relationship? Because apparently them two are dating.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That would make it even so much better. Hell yeah. Pull the trigger on that.
Tension.
I like that.
That's like perfect on-screen whatever. Chemistry.
And that would also add a new side to Renee Young that we're not yet to hear. And if they want her to become a full color commentator or whatever, that's a whole new side that you could add to her, sort of a dark sort of interview inside with Dean Ambrose, a bit more another string or a bow to say. So, I like that. Right,
real cool.
We'll move on to the emails now.
I think eventual future general manager Renee Young. Like, she's fit for that job. I think she'd make an awesome
really?
GM. Hell yeah.
You'd make her a character within the WWE universe.
Yeah, she's the girl next door, man. She's cute and cuddly. She comes off well on camera. She's finally getting comfortable in her own skin. I'm really starting to dig on Renee Young.
Wow, that's big that you'd actually start using her not as just as a presenter, but as actually a character within the universe. That's actually... Wow, I've never actually thought of her like that. I've always sort of had her as a presenter sort of standing on the inside, on the outside, sorry.
Don't they eventually do that to any of the interviewers? They kind of make them a character at some point?
For sure.
Yeah, to be fair to you, Michael Cole's been used as a character, Jerry's been used.
Todd Pettengill, boom. He wasn't used as a character. Then again, he sucked.
Yeah.
But then again, he's the bloke that got me into the product back in the mid-90s, so did he suck?
The coach?
Yes.
Coach, yes. All right, heavy, yes. Right, moving on to emails.
I'm going
to
bring in one thing about Dean Ambrose real quick. It's something I'd heard earlier, and it's a very good point. Well, there's one reason why Dean Ambrose gets the reaction he does, because he, unlike many other wrestlers, he appeals to everybody. He has the women that go crazy for him. There's the men that, you know, love his character. There's the smart wrestling fans who know about Jon Moxley, know about the background, and love it. He hits demographics that nobody does, like, altogether.
And not to mention, like, the key wrestling demo, which is, like, young teenage males filled with angst, piss, and vinegar, middle-class white America. I mean, he's, like, the poster boy.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, Roman Reigns, you know, he doesn't appeal to the smart wrestling fans. He will appeal to those people who like seeing that badass and the women that their panties get all wet from them. Katie, I'm sorry. But that's what happens to John Cena. He doesn't appeal to that crowd. And I don't know if he still gets women hot. You don't seem to hear about it as much anymore. But
Dean Ambrose.
I would say Daniel Bryan. I've never heard many women watch that and go, yeah, Daniel Bryan is sexy, unless they're talking about his beard.
Right, right, because I'm not Devil Vamp, and I'm not going to let waffling happen on my time. We'll go around the group, we'll go around all three of you, and we're going to say then, Dean Ambrose, in the next year, WWE champion, yes or no? Heavy set.
No.
No?
Nope.
Katie?
Yes.
Dan?
Next year, that brings us all the way past SummerSlam again. Yes, I will say yes.
All right, the more intriguing answer out there is Heavyset's no. Explain why you would not strap Dean Ambrose in the next year.
Because there's other people that I would strap within the next year and things you'd want to build within the next year. Dean Ambrose, he has it. I have no worries in his future. Right now, the way I perceive the future going, Brock Lesnar, obviously, holds the title up until WrestleMania. It's something that I felt even before I heard rumors about it. Then you have Daniel Bryan or Roman Reigns beating him at WrestleMania, which I'm perfectly fine with. I don't know how it would go after Daniel Bryan wins, but I see if, let's say it's Roman Reigns, I see Seth Rollins cashing in Monday Night Raw the next night. I see Seth Rollins holding the title because Roman Reigns can hold the title and it'll all make sense. He has been built to a certain level that he's a believable champion. Dean Ambrose is a guy that I have no doubt in my mind can rise to that occasion and become champion. But Seth Rollins does not have that factor with me. And he has to have time between now and Money in the Bank next year where he cashes in and he at least holds the title for some amount of time. And you got to figure there's got to be a back and forth between him and Roman Reigns for a while. Maybe at the tail end of this year that we're talking starting from this point on, maybe post SummerSlam to Night of Champions, maybe, but it's very slim. But after that point, if you say, let's talk about 2 years, yes, I see him becoming WWE champion within that last year. But this year coming up, no.
That's interesting. If it weren't for the fact that Sandow dropped the Money in the Bank last year, I'd have said Seth Rollins is dropping it this year. They can't have 2 years of that being dropped on the trot because it will then become the near enough perfect opportunity to become WWE champion. It becomes then 50-50 if they do that. And I honestly thought Rollins would be dropping that briefcase in losing the briefcase to someone else, but I don't know what they're going to do with that briefcase. I don't even think WWE know.
You should know that feeling all so well.
Don't worry, my plans will be made clear over the coming weeks.
But, I mean, to go back to...
Exclusive, the DSJMP WrestleCast.
I mean, going back to the whole thing, I think Damian Sandow was actually a victim of circumstances. I think they had some intention of doing something with him being champion, but sometime after SummerSlam and... whenever John Cena came back, WWE was like, all right, we want to combine the titles and we need to start building towards that point so Sandow can't be champion, so he has to completely lose. Now that we have moved on, I see no reason why Seth Rollins wouldn't win because they definitely have to build this up too that he's the first one to hold the Money in the Bank for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship and not just the WWE Championship or the World Heavyweight Championship.
You want to hear a crazy prediction?
Sure.
All right. So just thinking here, Because I really do believe that Brock is going to lose the title before WrestleMania, because you got to get some equity out of the gigantic push you gave him. Obviously going over Taker, going over John, huge victories the way he did, holding the belt all the way up until that point. But I have a weird feeling that someone's going to gank that title off of him right before WrestleMania, because with your Royal Rumble champion or winner automatically getting a shot against the only champion, it takes all the intrigue out of it. And really the only swerve tool you have at that point is the world title. And I could see like just someone unbelievable, like how Brock beating Undertaker was unbelievable, someone beating Brock, and that someone could be like a Dean Ambrose out of nowhere, maybe in an Elimination Chamber match, somehow finds a way to get in there and get a squirmy victory. Because I do believe Brock is going to fight Undertaker at WrestleMania 31, do the job. That'll be Taker's last match, and there's plenty of worth in that match. It sells itself. So use that title for what it's worth, the true tool that it is. Put that belt around someone like a Dean, and with that happening, even right there at Elimination, you could have Seth Rollins cash in. You could have him cash in at Mania. I mean, there's so many different ways you can go from there and still protect Brock and get the briefcase out, cash it in, get it out of play. To me, that's the much better and a much more fun way to go. That's it.
I'm going to call you a bastard, because I was going to say, it's all right you throwing these theories around, but I want a pay-per-view, I want an opponent, and you said Elimination Chamber, throw Dean Ambrose. Yeah, okay. You got me there. Katie, can you see something like that left-wing sort of craziness happening, or do you think that's Brock all the way to WrestleMania?
I mean, it could happen, but I could still see Brock going to Mania. I mean, if something like that should happen, I could easily see Dean Ambrose, because he's better doing something unexpected like that. It'd be cool either way.
Let me ask you this, Katie. Do you think Undertaker has wrestled his last match?
As of right now, yes. All as right. to, like, maybe in a few months from now, maybe my opinion will change, but right now, yes.
Last match, but not last appearance. Heavy, what do you think?
No, I think he's done.
Not even any more appearances?
Appearances. Oh, yeah, I think he'll do appearances, but WrestleMania match is done, and probably non-WrestleMania match is done, too, but he'll still maybe find ways to come on TV. But now that the streak's over, I don't see the lure of bringing him back. I'm even kind of backing away from the whole Sting match. Granted, it's perfect on paper. It's something that we've waited a long time for, but I don't think they could pull it off. And I kind of like the idea that WWE has been hinting while Sting's been hinting, and the opponent kind of hinted back at it. And that's Sting versus Bray Wyatt.
That's the one I want. Right. I'm going to call it quits there, because we really need to be getting on with the show. I can't believe that rumor got so much response. We'll move on to emails, and we've got Kat first. And he always does his This Week in Pro Wrestling History, and he's got this to say. Hey, yo. So for This Week in Pro Wrestling History, I present you with the following. September 26th, 1885. So we're going a long way back. Australia's first professional wrestling belt, William Miller versus Clarence Whistler, is staged at Melbourne's Theatre Royal. Whistler won, but died afterward. The cause of death was internal bleeding by eating a champagne glass after the match. I don't think any other comment is needed other than just that special. September 23rd, 1917. God, he's really going back this week. Normally he only goes back to like the 50s. September 23rd, 1917. Rodolfo Guzman Huerta. I don't know. My email reading skills are terrible. Better known to wrestling fans as El Santo, was born in, I'm not even going to fucking say that, Mexico. I'm glad this is entertaining, UK. I think this feature is only purely for you.
Yeah, it is. Clearly.
September 22nd, 96. Mark Henry made his in-ring debut at WWF In Your House 10 Mind Games event, where he'd go on to defeat Jerry the King Lawler. Anyone got anything to say on that? Or
USA?
There we go.
Hello.
Just because obviously I'd done a call the other week for a week in review, I just think Mark Henry is just fucking brilliant. And I'd also want to say that his tears in the accolade and the Anthem was just fucking brilliant in that Rusev match. I don't think any other wrestler could go that in depth in extras the way Mark Henry do. But that's just my opinion. I think I might have a little, like, little guy crush on him, so fair enough.
Mm-hmm. All right.
September 25th, 2000. The WWF moved its flagship show Raw to TNN. Nope, no comment. No.
It was much cooler when they came back to the USA.
That's just because you're biased.
USA.
And you'll probably want to say...
No, because...
And you'll want to say another We the People again.
Actually, if you would just shut your mouth, I would have to go, We the People. It's because that Homecoming Raw was awesome.
I hate you, Heavy. Thank you. Right. And in non-wrestling history, new cat segment. September 22nd, 2004, one of the greatest television series in history, Lost, aired. Thanks for the great show last week. I'm glad you all enjoyed my MP3. Kata out! Heavy, did you like Lost?
No.
Fair enough. Damn, he wanted to do a PS, fuck off Wayne, laughing my ass off, but Heavy didn't respond, so... Sorry, Kata, I murdered your email.
I responded, but I said no.
Heavy's too quick for me. Right, moving on to Devil Vamp.
I've heard that
Mr. DSJMP himself. Hi, guys and a girl. I'm taking heat talking about you, Kate. Hope Wayne is treating you right. Quick email from me. What do you guys think about WWE mentioning that people paid $59.99 for the pay-per-view and chat sizing for them? I thought it was pretty funny and a great way to people to move to the network. A very Vince McMahon move. What do you guys think? We'll go with Dan first. Do you think that was a piss take on the people that actually paid the full amount, or do you think that was the right thing to do?
Well, first of all, let me say, like, it's basically like Triple H or somebody saying, like, you people are so fucking stupid. Like, let me draw a picture for you. We'll hold up a graph. You paid this much when you could have paid this much. It's like they really do feel like people can't do the basic math. And that drives me crazy that they think fans are that stupid. And if there is anybody that stupid, it's why I hate this world. But I think it was a very ballsy move. This is how you piss off your cable providers. And it's a risky, risky move. But I applaud it. That's why I love Vince McMahon. It's just something that nobody else would do when they have a great network deal as they do.
Katie, someone that's recently purchased the network, do you think that is the correct way to get trade for your network, or do you think that was a bit of a piss take?
Yeah, they insulted their providers by doing that. I mean, I get they want people on the network, but to me, as long as they're watching a show, no matter what format, they're still going to make money.
Heavy, did you like it, or did you think they shouldn't have done it?
I thought it was pretty funny.
So that's pretty much the way you'd have done it then.
What was that?
So if you were to market the network, that's the way you'd have done it.
I mean, it's kind of like what Dan said of them, like, having to put everything on TV, but it's marketing. So I thought it was funny and nothing much else.
There we go, Devil. That was your email for the week. Hope you liked the responses. Moving on. Get this one done because it's bound to be a marathon. move on to DRG. I'm just pulling it up now. He has kindly done a soundbite, and here we go.
What is up to the DSJMP panel, you racist, racist motherfuckers? No, seriously, why is it we never have black people or Hispanics on the show? Anyways, I know that I'm pulling up to work right now, and I'm not going to be able to make it, and I'm sure Heavy's sitting there doing jumping jacks right now. Yeah, we know Heavy's not doing jumping jacks, but he is smiling that I'm not around. However, I do have some questions for you guys. First of which, it's been reported by numerous sources that Josh Matthews has signed with TNA. My question is, which of the tired and outdated announcers do you want him to replace, TNA or Taz? Or would you rather, you know, him and Borash take over for both of them? Or do you think that he might have actually signed as an extra announcer for a new television show?
So, we'll go around the group then. Dan, as someone that watches all the products, do you think Josh Matthews will do a good job for TNA? And who would you replace on TNA's current roster with him?
I would just swap out TNA and Taz for Borash and Matthews. flat out. That's a bold move. It'll cost you less, and it'll pay off more in the long term.
You think both the current day Taz and Tanay have had their day then?
Yeah, it's over. I wish. I mean, that's fantasy land. I mean, will it happen? I don't know, but that's what I would do personally.
Heavy set.
I could see him replacing Tanay. Tanay's just old and boring. Granted, Taz is no better. And all I got to say is, DRG, fuck you. Because right now I'm pumping diesel. So when I heard that, I actually did jumping jacks. So you got what you asked for.
And KE, for someone that don't watch a TNA product, would you like to see Josh Matthews reinvent his career somewhere else? Or do you think like WWE are right in getting rid of him?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time TNA has somebody from WWE, but I could see him replacing Mike Tenay. You know, it's something, he'll provide something different. And I've always liked him as an announcer in WWE. I thought he was good. So I think he would make a great fit there.
Right, we'll move on to the next bit of the call. Hope I paused it in the right place.
Next, after listening to Bully Dave talk about how he walked away from wrestling because the death of WCW was just too harsh to bear, I was curious, has there ever been a moment where you just said, fuck this shit, and didn't want to watch anymore?
We'll go with Dan, because I got a feeling about a couple months ago when he done a week in review, and he put, yes, wrestling, yay. That night, he just had enough with the product. I might be being harsh and reading in the stuff that weren't there. Dan, have you ever felt like just, I've reached the end of my tether with the product, I could just give this up now? Or have you always loved it and you'd never give it up?
Oh, yeah. All the time, man. Yeah. I don't know. Only because I'm stubborn. I mean, coming out of my wedding after not doing the show for as long as I did and not watching for as long as I did, like, I could have very easily just done without for a couple of years. And I would have if it wasn't for the show and all that. But, yeah, there's plenty of times where I'm just ready to not watch for a little bit. But every week I find a different reason why I was right in sticking with it. And it usually has nothing to do with wrestling, but something to do with the community.
Yeah, a lot of me watching so I can contribute to the week in review, and it is a lot more of the community than my need to watch Raw. Katie, do you ever feel burned out with the product?
With wrestling, sometimes. I mean, it depends on how the product is and how the wrestlers and the characters are. I mean, there was a time I debated to stop watching it for a while because I just got bored with it. But like Dan said, there's like certain parts that'll just bring you back in and it'll get you enjoying and loving it again.
Yeah, definitely. Heavy, I need you to do me a massive favor now. I really need a toilet break, so I need you to ramble on. Has there ever been times when you've fallen out of love with the product, and why did you persist on staying? Because I know you've, for at least 20 years, been with pro wrestling and stuff. There must have been times when you've wanted to drop off, and why did you continue onwards?
No. I'll go.
I hate you.
Go take a leak in your whatever you guys call the loo or whatever.
Cheers, my boy.
I've never felt that. I've never felt like I've wanted to stop watching wrestling, and I think it all just all goes back to when I started watching wrestling as a kid, and it became a thing that I watched every week, like every other TV show with my dad, and we didn't have other sports to bond over, like baseball or football or any of that, real football, by the way. So the thing that we had every week was wrestling. It was us coming home every week from church. Thank God Devil Vamp's not here. But we would watch WWE or WWF All-American every Sunday. It was on or about to come on every Sunday when I came home. And then I was at a fairly young age when Raw first came on. And I think sometime within the first year, my dad actually started letting me stay up to watch it. And it was just something that I became hooked in. And for me, wrestling was like comic books for some people, or Transformers, or any other thing that they got into as a kid. For me, it was wrestling. I've never wanted to turn away, and it's always been an extreme, extreme passion of mine. And there's nothing that would probably make me stop watching. Was that long enough?
Just to correct myself, I always love watching wrestling, but there's some weeks where I just don't want to critique it. Like this week would have been a perfect week to let the product breathe a little bit, like Fandango's A's. Like, this is a great week to let the product breathe, but I feel like I'm disappointing anybody, and I know you guys feel like with this show, like you feel like you're disappointed if you don't go on, but sometimes there's just weeks where there's really not a whole shit ton to talk about.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, at least we don't do the Impact players as of right now. I mean, that takes a little bit off your load, so I mean, that's got to be a little bit of a sigh of relief for you, but
for sure.
I could see how it could be, especially how the show used to be formatted with the outline bit by bit and all that other stuff. But I don't know. I mean, there's times I'm just like, well, wrestling's not that great right now, but like, I still watch it. I mean, I think I also benefited from periods where it's not that I didn't watch wrestling. It was, I had a job that I had to work during at some point of Raw or SmackDown or both of them. So, but I would keep up on what I could, watch maybe replay shows, and that was before DVRs. So I would still find something to watch, or I'd still find some way to keep up with everything. And like, so I would have those times, and I think a lot of those were in the early 2000s when I started working and whatnot, where I would miss parts of Raw. All
right, let's see what else DRG's got to say.
And finally, I want to know what a term means. See, in these podcasts and everything, we throw insider terms around all the time. And Mark is a word that gets tossed out a lot. But I want to know what that means to each member of the panel and what their opinion as to what Mark really is.
That's my time, guys. Vamp, if you're on a podcast and they say, hey, DRG, there's a spoiler coming up, so skip this section. Do not state the spoiler in the next section where DRG emails to. Thanks. Appreciate it. Love you, Vampy. Gone.
That was from last week's second shift where we done a spoiler section. We warned DRG to move on, and then Devil Vamp revealed the spoiler in DRG's actual email response. So I can see why DRG is pissed off still. DRG asked then, what is a term in wrestling? I'm guessing he means like time frame. Heavyset, what do you think?
Was he meaning the connotation that people use, or the background of the term?
I only heard like what his question was, like, what does a mark mean to you?
To me, a mark means just a gullible wrestling fan, as someone who buys into it. And it all stems back from what the word mark actually means, which I'll let Dan explain that on his turn, because I know he knows it and he can explain it a little bit better than I can. But it's just someone who fully buys into it. And people use mark like it's a bad term, like, oh, you're such a mark. I use mark in everyday language or everyday talking about stuff, and I don't use it in a bad connotation. And like I always say, I'm a Ghostbusters mark. I'm a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mark. It means I love something and I don't care about what other people think, and I don't care of how smart that makes me look, how dumb it makes me look. It's something that I love, and I throw no caution to the wind.
I always class it, for my opinion, as someone that is just, they could throw anything at you and you fucking buy it. You swallow it and you fucking love it. That is what I class as a mark. And I love the fact that Heavy dropped there that using wrestling terms outside of the wrestling environment, like when like Captain Awesome says on the heavy announce table, Spanish announce table, oh, that person in that film's the heel. I have found myself fucking using wrestling terms outside the wrestling environment, and everyone goes, what the fuck are you on about? And yeah, I just love it. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Katie, how do you define mark?
Well, before I get into that, I did listen to Awesome talking about that. And only just recently, like the last couple of years, I've been using more wrestling terms in everyday life. Before that, what mark means to me, I actually honestly didn't know what it meant for the longest time, because I always just classified myself as a fan, just a fan, not like a term. But to me, it's like what Heavy said, people buy into it, they believe in it more, they think, they're more involved into it.
Yep. And Dan, what is your definition of the word mark?
Well, it's funny because mark has kind of become like the fuck of the English vocabulary, in the sense that you could use it for anything in a wrestling conversation. Like, oh, he's a mark, or I'm totally marking out, or he's a mark for himself. I mean, there's just so many marking ways to use the mark and mark, man. It's just, it's evolved over the years in the wrestling nomenclature as it is. But to me, it simply means you're third eye blind. You do not have an evolved view of the wrestling industry. You're very newcomer. You buy in. You don't have to elevate your disbelief because you wholeheartedly believe. And that's a good thing. I mean, I could go on forever about the mark word. I mean, that, as Heavy said, I talked about it before, where the term comes from, which is actually cool if anyone ever wants to Google it. But, you know, I don't even think I learned it through the internet. I think I've heard it on a documentary about circuses. But anyways, it goes way back. But the term mark to me is just, it means you're third eye blind.
Yeah, totally. And I hope, DRG, that has answered everything you wanted to. And anyone else, if you want to email us, you can email us on dsjmp.com@gmail.com. You can tweet us, and we'll read your tweets out on @dsjmp.com. And get a little plug in for the Second Shift. @SecondShiftPod is our Twitter, and @SecondShiftPod@gmail.com is Second Shift's email address. Email us, tweet us, we'll read your stuff out on air. Right, moving on to best of the week and what are you watching, because the last few weeks they tend to be merging. So is there any different wrestling promotions, anything on the network, just anything in the world of wrestling that you just want to bring up for best of the week? And we'll go with Heavy.
I don't have a really best of the week, but when I was home briefly last week, I caught up on a bunch of different shows that I know I was behind on, and I caught up. Well, actually, I'm fully caught up on Total Divas now. I was totally behind on season 2 and this season, and now I'm all the way caught up. But in between that and the Monday Night Wars, WWE versus WCW, I love what they're doing with that. And fucking Vamp, when that show first started, and he was like, after they got a couple episodes in, like, well, it just seems like they're in. They've already covered everything. But it's like, no, this is pretty much an hour-long show, and they find topics to last that whole hour. It's like they're putting out mini documentaries,
I was going to say, there's never been a full DX documentary. That is probably the closest you're going to get to the rounded product of DX. It's just brilliant. There's 20-plus parts in it, they're saying, Monday Night Wars.
I didn't hear a final part, but I still think that's awesome of everything that they're doing and the way they're going. You know, from, you know, they've had the Mick Foley episode, the DX episode, the NWO episode. And I, you know, you gotta, there's gonna have to be some sort of Goldberg episode, and, you know, or maybe Goldberg and Austin episodes. I mean,
but you're also gonna have people bitching that the new Sting DVD is just a best of. They wanted a documentary, not just a best of collection. You're gonna get a Sting Monday Night Wars episode. That's gonna be an hour long documentary of Sting. You're going to get everything that was in the 90s in an hour-long documentary, aren't you? So,
yeah, something like that. And it's just, if this was a box set, I mean, you're talking, this is going to be, if it's 20 hours, you're going to get close to 20 hours of material. And I love it. It's one of the few things on the network that I try to catch up on, because there's just only so much time in the day.
No, definitely. I don't think there's one person I've come across that has said Monday Night Wars isn't for me. That's always the one program people say they'll try and catch on the network. Katie, best of the week, and what are you watching?
What I'm watching, I watched a lot of the network. I caught up with all the Monday Night Wars episodes. I really like the DX one and the McFoley one and lots of the countdowns. I think tonight they had ECW one for Monday Night Wars and High Flyers that I'll be watching after this. So I did watch Total Divas where Natty yanked Summer out of the car. Whoopee.
Yeah. Go Natty.
Yep. She always gets feisty. Anyway, my best of the week, Dean Ambrose. I'm just happy he's back and going crazy on everybody.
I think a lot of people are relieved he's back. Dan, what's your best of the week and what are you watching?
I don't know if anyone was watching the WWE second screen, but for some reason, Big E did like a spoof on Goldberg. And they made like the E Big and the Goldberg name. And he came out, did the whole thing where he banged on the door and started yelling for no reason. It was pretty funny. Had me kind of going for a little bit there. And
really? What show was that on then? The latest Raw?
Well, that was on the second screen. Like what they, if you were using like the app during the show live, you in between commercial breaks. And they said it was going to come on later in the show, but they didn't. They didn't use it. So, but whatever.
As I say, it went on Michael Cole's recap bits that he normally do after each ad. I'd like to actually sit now. I might try and see if I can find out on YouTube or something.
Like Xavier Woods was his security guard. Like Goldberg used to have security on the lookout. It was really funny. I mean, it was just like, are you serious? Are they really doing this right now? But they didn't go through with it on the actual live show, which kind of bummed me out because I was waiting for it for the rest of the show. But anyways, what I'm watching, just Countdown. I'm always trying. I haven't watched the full library from the first season. They already started the second season. So when I got free time, I watched that. I like it. It's a great way to refresh your memory on a lot of things really quickly. Like for me, I watch the network to remind myself of what I've already watched. So when I see like little glimpses, I'm like, oh yeah, that. So it gets stored in my memory bank. And ultimately, that's what I try to do is just remember shit to bring it up in discussion and prove points and blah, blah, blah.
No, I totally agree. Countdown's a great way of watching documentaries without having to sit through full stories. You get little bursts of, you get like little 5-minute documentaries on each entry, and that's just a brilliant way without having to sit through a whole lot of stuff that you already know. You can just sit there, tune off, and you can casually take it in. And no, I love Countdown.
Can I recommend one for him to watch?
Please.
Go for
the top 10 gimmicks, because that was
Yeah.
That was so fun.
They had some really good ones on there. Like, some of them were hysterical, and like it's the ones
the
you
Red
would
Rooster
expect.
Got me.
Is that the first time you've seen the Red Rooster?
No, I remember the Red Rooster. I'm not that young.
Because that's going back now. Like, if you saw the Rooster, you've been a long-time wrestling fan, because that really was a long time
ago.
But, man, I can't believe he actually got what I forgot about that whole Red Rooster thing is that he got the thing over. Like people were doing it in the crowd and there was.
I
like,
wouldn't say it was Rooster Booster, but I remember him.
Yeah, Rooster Booster. I totally forgot about all that. And it's little stuff like that in Countdown. It just is like, oh my God, the Red Rooster. And you see like how Terry Taylor had to commit and also how he's like, are you serious? Like, this is what I have to do.
Yeah, he looked at the photo and he was laughing.
You could tell it was like Vanilla Ice, like something that will forever besmirch him until his dying day. Like Ice Ice Baby. Anyways, yeah.
Right.
Red Roosterville.
Fucking Red Rooster. Brilliant, we even got an impression. Right, moving on to free-for-all. So anything, don't even have to be wrestling-related, you can bring up here. And last segment of the week. Heavy Set, anything on the free-for-all?
There is one thing that I've heard a lot of people like talk and complain about that I don't think they know the whole story on. And as far as what I understand it, and it's something that it makes sense to me. It's why they're one another reason why they're changing wrestlers' names when they come in the WWE. It's not just they want to brand their own people and blah, blah, blah. That is part of it. But there's also some like legality behind it. And it's, if they go by older names, they have to pay some sort of royalties or something to previous promotions they've worked at. So like that's another reason why Kenta is not Kenta in WWE, he's whatever his new name is. I don't know it exactly offhand.
You're
Aido Kami.
So you're saying that's because they don't want to pay royalties to previous employees and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're the WWE. Like, you are the global juggernaut, the number one. You can easily work that in with the ultimate buyout or just a one lump payment for the name and trademark or the deal that doesn't get done. If that's a luxury, say, well, then no, I'm done. I'm out. You can very easily say, we're taking the name over and here's your money. Go away.
But it's I'll say it's not WWE versus Kenta. It's going up against these other companies. And if I was another company, there's no amount of money you're going to pay me, because if this wrestler, if Kenta becomes this big name, or any other Kevin Steen or anybody, they become a big name, then you have ROH and New Japan or any place that Kenta worked for, just kind of like saying, hey, you need this, we need this amount of money for all these royalties. There's some more behind it, but it's a legal reason.
Okay, we'll go with then. Do you think there's more money to be made out of his current name or Kenta? Do you think WWE could make more money and then some to pay everyone else off out of Kenta, or do you think the best thing is for them to create the new name, Heavy?
I think the best thing for them is to create a new name. It's whenever they first get introduced as a name, it always, like, you hear it and you're like, oh my God, that's so dumb. But then after a while, you become attached to it and you build these newer memories behind that wrestler. I can't tell you how many wrestlers I've heard get renamed and I go, really? You're going to call Brody Lee Luke Harper? You're going to call John Moxley Dean Ambrose? Those names are so stupid. But look what they're doing with those names. You finally look past him. And also another one, a great one, Sami Zayn, El Generico. When that whole thing was coming about, people was like, you're going to throw away this great gimmick, El Generico. How could you do that? But Sami Zayn took his talent and let his talent shine out past the name. And that's what the talent has to do. So really, when it comes to the name, isn't nothing. People just don't like change.
Well, Sami Zayn changed gimmicks, and names, which is different. It was not like Kenta's changing gimmicks. He's just changing names. I think, if anything, they should have went.
Brody.
And look, some name changes work, some don't. Like, for the list you read me of guys' names that were good, there's some that were bad, that they got really bad. They had to send them down and change it and shit like that. But the ultimate point to me, I think, like, Ichiro. Like, Ichiro works. Like, for whatever reason, America embraced that. I think it needs to be one word, like, three syllables, and it needs to be, like, clingable. If they're going to change it, like, Kenta, I love it, because it's one word, it's easy to remember. Like, the whole Hideo Itami, it's just too much to remember. If you can't remember it instantaneously, you fucked up. That's how I see it.
Look at Brody Lee on the indies, and look at Luke Harper now. Nothing has changed. It's pretty much the same gimmick, and it's, once again, a guy who's done fine.
And last week, I accidentally did call him Brody Lee still all this time later, because to me, that's just like, that tells me that he's one of the few guys whose name I can't remember. Like, I get Luke Harper, I call him both Luke Harper. I know one of them's Eric Rowan, but it takes a second for it to sink in. And I always just want to call him Brody.
There
was a brief point that you actually called him Brody Lee and Luke Harper.
Exactly. My point exactly.
So we got Heavyset that will side with, it's not about the name, it's about what your work is at the moment. We've got Dan that is like, yeah, but there is equity in the name, why not use it? Katie, you're the deciding vote.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you shouldn't be so good and neutral and everything, so the deciding vote.
Well, there's another person, Seth Rollins, used to go by Tyler Black from Ring of Honor,
mm-hmm.
and he's become a big star, so I think it does, to me, sometimes changing your name is the best thing, because you become a bigger star out of that, and we named off a few examples, so I agree, change the name.
See, I think we're doing apples and oranges, because America, it's different. I mean, you want to change names to the different markets you go to, and to, but when you have global appeal like Sin Cara and Mystico, I still think he would have been suited much better off as Mystico. I mean, there's comic books after the guy, for God's sakes. And it's because the name's recognizable in foreign waters, which is ultimately what picking up a Hideo Itami is. It's trying to get a foothold in that market. So why not stay true to the character they already know? To me, it's just like, isn't that the whole point of signing him? Why don't you want to market him properly when he's already over? Why do you want to force feed him something other than what he is? It just seems like an ass backwards way. And I get it. I understand all the trademarks and all that stuff. It's just, but sometimes I think an exception overrides the normal, the typical. I'm all for name changes, but in this one case, I just think they should have just not.
Because really what you want is, or what WWE wants, you want the talent, not the name.
That's what I was saying last week. I agree. That is what they're paying for. They're paying for the talent, not the name. And they make that abundantly clear 8 days a week. And I respect that because they really do feel I'm buying your athleticism, not anything you did with a name or a gimmick. And in some sense, that's the way a military approaches things. You break them down to their bare basics and then you build them up in your own image. So that is what an ultimate factory mind frame is like. So I commend WWE for sticking to their guns. Let's see if it works.
Right, we've got one then. Quick round the group. Devitt and Steen, will they be different names when they're unveiled? Heavy?
Oh, yeah.
Katie?
I see you.
And Dan?
Agree.
So we'll just have to wait until they're obviously unveilings to see what they'll be called. Right, we'll move on to Katie Free-for-All.
I don't have much to talk about in the preview. I think I talked about everything I talked about earlier, so I'm happy to be here.
That's fine. I'm not going to... Thank you. I'm not going to ham you like everyone else do for me when I can't come up with something. So,
oh.
Dan, have you got anything for the free-for-all? Dan?
My bad. Yeah, I got something here that's getting kind of a good response on Twitter, is something I brought up on the Week in Review, which is that at night or at Tribute to the Troops, you have Rusev show up and draw a massive amount of heat in front of American troops. You have John Cena make kind of like that Lex Luger moment where he made the slam heard round the world at the military base. And you make this moment with JBL on commentary. He's been playing this up so perfectly. We all know he's the guy behind Tribute to the Troops, the guy who initially started the coalition and blah, blah, blah. So I think with JBL going crazy, the soldiers behind him just going nuts for Cena, because they're all marks for Cena, make no mistake about it. Rusev drawing that true Sergeant Slaughter suicide heat or death threat heat, I think it's a perfect combustible element. I know it's pre-taped, but I think it's worth it, and it's one of those moments that impressionable eight-year-olds will remember forever, seeing the soldiers cheer for John Cena beating the unstoppable force that is Rusev. What do you guys think about that?
Is that December that happens?
Yes.
I think, yeah.
So it's not that far to build it up to. That would be about right to keep him undefeated. I like that. I can see that working. Heavy?
I'll one-up you. Not John Cena, but the return of Kurt Angle.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we hinted on that earlier. I like that. I don't know about everyone else.
That would have been awesome.
Katie?
Wait,
would you like to see Kurt Angle come back? Actually, they do it at that.
Better yet, since Dan mentioned it, the return of Lex Luger.
Oh, no, fuck. Bloke can't barely walk, by all accounts, can he, poor wheelchair bloke?
Total package, not. John.
Tribute for the Troops. Would that be the right time to cut Rusev's undefeated streak?
It certainly would be a feel-good moment. The troops would love it. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. It's a bit different than keep dragging it to a pay-per-view, do it for a TV special, and then it adds meaning to that special, and other people might watch it, because I'm not going to lie, I don't watch Tribute for the Troops, but if that was Rusev's downfall, was that, then I might be inclined to actually go and look for it. And
could you imagine?
I like that
could
idea.
Could you imagine Lana saying to the foreign troops, shut up? Oh man, they'd go nuts. They'd bombast her. That'd be fantastic.
Nah, I totally agree. I think, well, we'll see in a couple of months, won't we, if that's the way they'll decide to go with it, or if they'll just job Rusev out randomly at some event. Like,
I think they'll
how many times do they build someone and then they just randomly lose it? So what was that, Kate?
I think they'll definitely have him on the show just to get that like heat on him and stuff like that.
I think that's the time for him to lose it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. Right, I think the show has run long enough now, so I'd like to thank Heavy, Katie, Chevy, and Dan for being on today. If you'd like to email or tweet us, it's @dsjmp.com or dsjmp.com@gmail.com. Where can we find you guys, Heavy?
At NFL Easy Picks.
And Kayfabe Sports?
Yes, and at Kayfabe Sports. Maybe if... Devil Vamp decides to upload the episodes to the Kayfabe feed, they'd be available there.
And we know Kat would appreciate that as well. Katie, where can we find you?
Follow me at Katie First Lady, KATIE, the number one, STLADY. Follow me, I'm much cooler on Twitter.
And do you want to put a plug in for your niece?
Oh, Alyssa, because she'll listen to the show because you're hosting. Follow her. Follow her at BlueKazoo512.
Thank you, Alyssa. You're lovely. Dan, where can we find you?
At Dan Buchanan.
Brilliant. Short and sweet. And because he's too modest to say it, you can also hear him on the best wrestling podcast, All Wrestling Week in Review. Download it now. And you can find me on @WaynesAbaker. And you can also find me on @SecondShiftPod. Catch me there.
And that was episode 32 of DSJMP Wrestlecast. Last few weeks we've had some good feedback about the outro, which is Devil Vamp's good buddy Exodus. We'll provide links in the blurb. And we've got another one of these songs, and I hope you enjoy it. And until next week, sayonara.
All right, it's me, Devil Vamp, and Wayne is a Baker, and DRG talking about TNA real quick. Little Easter egg for you guys to apologize for Wayne fucking up the audio this morning. So here we go. So what happened, DRG, is that I watched TNA, and whatever the first thing that came to my mind, I just wrote it down on a piece of paper. That's it. I played like a little game with myself. Whatever came to my mind, like I'm watching it. What the fuck? Or I like that, or I didn't like that, or whatever. All right, so the first thing that came to my mind was there's no stage, at least in that Manhattan Center they were in. There was no like stage. They just kind of walk from the right side of the screen to the middle. So that I thought that was a little
they
weird.
Walked from backdrop down the ramp.
Okay, I just thought it was a little weird. They didn't have a stage. Mm-hmm.
If there's no space, what do you expect them to do?
No, I agree.
They even got space for a commentary booth.
I agree. I'm just saying. I just thought it was a little weird. That's all.
Yeah, the last time it actually had a stage, I think, was besides the Impact Zone, it was whenever they were in Salt Lake City, I want to say. Okay. It's been a while.
Okay. Everyone makes fun of the WWE for mentioning 999. These guys must have mentioned that knockout calendar like 50 times. Mm-hmm. It was, I'd counted it at one point. It was 9 times within the first hour. Within the first hour is 9 times. And then I stopped counting. Havoc has one of the biggest asses I have ever seen in my life on a diva. Her fucking butt and her thighs are ginormous.
Do you not remember Bertha Faye?
No, I don't remember Bertha Faye at all.
Oh my dude, go on She's your big, on big your girl. WWE app and download and search for Bertha Faye and then tell me who's got the biggest ass. Mm-hmm. She battled Yokozuna for the biggest ass weight in the roster.
She was that Havoc. Now the funny thing is, like, I kind of found her a little attractive in the face, but her ass is just huge. Her thighs and her butt were just so big.
Just imagine them wrapped around you though.
That's too much. It's too much.
She reminds me.
I'm going to die.
She reminds me, and Kata will know this, she reminds me of what Bull Nakano was when she was facing Alundra Blaze back in like the late 80s.
Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember that because I remember almost everything Alundra Blaze does. I was such a big Alundra Blaze fan until she ruined it. Mm-hmm. I don't think the knockouts are very pretty. I don't know. I just, at least the ones I saw in the ring. Gail Kim's was always pretty to me. But the knockouts I saw in the ring were not very pretty. Again, it's a personal taste. I can't really
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough. I have no opinions about what their superficial looks are. That doesn't bother me.
Again, that just comes back down to the calendar. Like, if you're going to tout the calendar, and again, I didn't see every diva, I call them divas, but every knockout on their roster, you know. I didn't see everybody, so, you know, I can't judge them all. No,
you pretty much did.
Oh, really?
I pretty much saw everybody.
Okay. Because they were in a battle royal for the number one contender.
Because, like, Bayley, to me, she looks like a little sister. She does not look sexual. AJ Lee looks like a 14-year-old girl to me. That's not sexy. So I get it. It's a personal taste type thing.
Bayley, I do find attractive because I like that girl next door look. But AJ, I don't overly find attractive. Like, I don't. That's, she's just not for me. That's not, like, I like the attitude of AJ, but the body type of AJ, she's just too small. I'm with Wayne. I'm more of a Paige girl. Paige is a woman. AJ is not. I know I'm gonna get shit for this. It's not really. I'm sorry. Never mind. I'm just gonna be quiet.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Going back to the 999, they mentioned Flex Magazine twice. I did really like the backstage segments they had. Whenever they had a backstage segment, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So they had a backstage segment like with Sam Shaw. What?
Like the Samuel Shaw and Gunner?
Yes. Yes. That's what I was going to say. They had a backstage segment with Samuel Shaw and Gunner. I really like that. I like the camera angles they use. I really did enjoy that. The music needs to be more clear through the TV, which means I don't think they're piping it through the audio system into the TV. I think they're using the microphones on the cameras instead. Mm-hmm. Kenny King is a star. I wrote it down. Kenny King is a star.
Yeah.
He needs to be more prominent with the bigger role. Fantastic.
Finn will be happy now you said that.
Who?
Oh, his peg leg comment.
Oh, yeah.
His peg leg comment was just straight up drawing heel, old school. I'm going to say whatever the fuck gets under your skin.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I absolutely, that guy just, he oozed stardom. I just automatically saw it in him. Automatically.
You have not gotten to see him wrestle yet, man. Just wait till you actually get to see him in a match. Because, like, Chris Melendez, yes, he had a couple of his spots. But watching him take on somebody like Manic or Low-Key or Samoa Joe is completely different than him fighting, you know, Chris Melendez.
Good. I mean, you just, you should listen to Mr. Kennedy DRG and quit smoking. I did it. I did it cold turkey.
I'm vaping right now.
Oh, that's good. But you can't do both. You'll OD on nicotine. I found myself cheering for Chris Melendez. I don't
really.
Yeah, I did. I did. That's, I really did.
Very, very interesting. Most people that are like real big internet fans, and I'm not saying you are this way, but from what I've heard, have done nothing but shit on him. Oh, he's just a publicity stunt. He's yada, yada, yada. He has no value, blah, 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 blah. He's shit in the ring.
No, he's actually really good in the ring compared to, like, he's got a one fucking leg. Like, he's really good in the ring. Like, I really enjoy, I don't know. I just found myself cheering for him. Second,
he's working with a prosthetic. Wait, because I've seen him without that prosthetic, and he actually moves better without it.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Second bad stick segment, not that great, but I did like it. Which was Mr. Kennedy and Chris Melendez. The second bad stick. X Division, Homicide is a dumb name. Joe looks
it's
like
he's fit for the LAX gimmick that they used to have.
It's fucking stupid. He needs to get rid of it. Joe looks like he's gonna die. Joe looks like shit. He's ginormous. He's so fucking fat right now. Oh my god, he's so fucking fat. He's fatter than me.
He's,
holy god.
Mowing, man. What do you expect? Do you not remember the head shrinkers of old?
I do, but
not everybody in the Samoan descent, which actually The Rock had part Samoan, but wasn't full blood. Mm-hmm. And he's actually not Samoan. He's from a different place, but it's that island area. But most of those people have thicker bodies. It's just the way their body genetics work.
Okay. Again, this is all stuff that just was on top of my head. I'm just going with whatever my gut, whatever I felt.
I know,
at
I'm
the time.
Trying to have a conversation with you about it.
I got you. No. I got you. I'm enjoying all this. I'm just saying. Like I said, Joe looks like he's going to die. Still don't like this six-sided ring. It's too small. It drives me crazy.
Too small?
Yeah, it's too small. It needs to be spread out. It needs to be widened. in my opinion.
You realize that it's bigger than a traditional four-sided ring.
Yeah, yeah, with the square with the square footage it is, but it doesn't seem like that when they're bouncing off the ropes or someone's trying to bounce off the ropes. It's you know what I mean, but it's hard to describe on the on the microphone.
So like cosmetically, visually, it looks smaller.
Oh my god, it looks so much smaller. I just think they need to spread out the. I just think they need to spread out the bars a little bit more. Just spread it out a little bit more. Get a little more space between the ropes. I think it's because the ropes are so around them all the time. You don't have that gap in the corner. There's no gap in the corners because there is. There's almost no corners. So if they spread it out a little bit more, I think they'd be a little bit better. But you know, that's just me.
So I can't see that because they're moaning that there's not enough space on the outside of the ring for them to do stuff out there anyway.
Well, I mean,
I think the ring has been opened up so much more with having the six sides, but
I think the corner sections, because they have that little square where the corner sections are in like the top right and top left, those corners have a lot more space. Because you see when Austin Aries goes to do his suicide dive, that's where he executes it, is heading towards that corner.
No, I understand that, but it's just I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I can do a better job later, but it wasn't.
I get what you're saying. It's just one of those things you got to get used to.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the next couple of weeks I will. Joe and Manic Homicide didn't have a good match at all. I wasn't a big fan of that match. Joe is fucking huge. He's fat. He's ginormous. Moving on. Matt Hardy is fucking fat too. Oh, so fucking. Oh, that guy needs to. Fat Hardy is definitely right. The Wolves remind me of Benoit. They have the same muscle build as Benoit. Does that make it? That makes any sense?
Yeah, I hear a lot of comparisons with Davey Richards to Dynamite. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kid, so that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Definitely. Just for some reason, they're a little bit shorter than normal wrestlers, but they can move in the ring and they still have the moves. It just reminded me of Benoit a lot. Matt Hardy does not have it anymore. He needs to go away. He does not have it.
I thought he did really well in what he did with that ladder match, because he was the ring general aspect where he didn't have to do anything to stand out, but he was always there to be in the right place at the right time. And especially props for taking that double foot stomp off the top rope to the outside on the table. I mean, he can still take the punishment, probably because of the extra layer of blubber on his stomach. But he is not the person that's going to command the match and show the high spots. That's going to be all centered around what he dictates in the ring. Yep. And he's been doing that in Ring of Honor lately as well, too.
Yeah, that brings me to Team 3D. Fucking awesome. They look better than ever. They move better than ever. They wrestle better than ever. Those guys are probably better than they were 10 years ago. Those guys are fantastic.
Yep.
I enjoyed both those guys. Wolves are great. I liked them. The ref during the match was Earl Hebner. I don't know why Earl Hebner is a referee for TNA. We should not do that.
I love Earl Hebner because he's old and he still comes out with the "I screwed Brett" gimmicks. That's hilarious.
I don't know.
He's at a point now to where he does not need to be in the ring like for big matches like that where he's got to move constantly back and forth. He does not need to be the ref in there. It needs to be Stifler and it needs to be Brian Hebner. And I absolutely love Brian Hebner's shoes. Those shoes that have the blue, the Impact blue on the bottom of them. I don't know what it is, but it gets me every time I look at them.
Yeah, I didn't say anything about that, but definitely I noticed it. Yeah. And then I said, question mark next to Rude. Why is he not in the WWE?
Because he has been homegrown in TNA for the longest time. He actually had some tryout matches and stuff. He was on an episode of Velocity at one point, but when he got brought in by Scott D'Amore, he's just been with TNA ever since. They have done an excellent job of building the career of that man in front of all the TNA fans' eyes. Similar to how you saw with AJ and a lot of what Christopher Daniels' career was as well.
And then last thing is Lashley still looks like a nice guy no matter how much punishment he puts on somebody or whatever. He doesn't. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I don't buy the bad guy. I don't buy the bad guy. I just don't. But that's just me for right now. Until I watch it tonight, I guess. Yeah, tonight. I won't watch it tonight, but I mean, I'll watch it on DVR tomorrow. So
Lashley has an interesting dynamic, which is actually polar opposite of what Lesnar has with Heyman. Because Heyman has the I'm the advocate. I don't have to do anything except for tell you that this guy's going to kill you. Whereas MVP has to pretty much tell you that this guy might not look like what you think you are because he's got a smiley face, but he will destroy you. He will break you down. He is the king of everything in this thing. In TNA, there's nobody that can stop him. It's like MVP and the Don King role, whereas Paul Heyman is top-notch and stellar from the moment that he came back in this last run with TNA. He has outdone anything and outshined anything that he ever did in WWE. And it's been due to a large part MVP selling the fact that, hey, we know you're not going to believe Lashley's a bad guy because his voice is so high-pitched and his face looks so kind. So I'm just going to tell you that this guy will absolutely kill you.
MVP, I still just don't like. I don't like that guy. I never have. I don't think I ever will. MVP, I just can't stand that motherfucker. I don't know what it is about him. I just can't stand him.
He's a bad guy. You're not supposed to like him.
I know, but I just, like... Oh, I don't know what it is. I just don't want to do it. I just don't, I legitimately don't like him. I wish I knew what it was. I just don't.
Because he's black. That's why you don't have any black people on the podcast.
How many black people on the podcast? Because I don't know any black wrestling fans.
Because you're a racist.
Okay.
I like MVP. My favorite thing about MVP is his speaking ability. The interviews that he's done with Sam Roberts, the stuff that he did on Talk to Jericho and Colt Cabana, the guy can talk and captivate you with the words that he says. The best stuff that he has ever done wrestling-wise has been in New Japan Wrestling, so most people outside of like me and Kata and other select few don't really know his capabilities in the ring. Most people think of, oh, MVP, he did that thing with Matt Hardy. But MVP is a lot better than people realize.
I'm not denying.
I can understand if that's not your personal taste. If you don't like him, I get it. Because there's several people in WWE that I just don't like. Bo Dallas. I just don't like Bo Dallas. So I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I really don't. It's not that I don't like doubt his talents. I don't like him. You know what I mean? It's not the fact that, you know, I think he's going to suck ass or whatever. It's the fact that I just don't like the fucking guy. I just don't like him. I don't know what it is either.
It's the same thing. Like I said, same thing with me and Bo Dallas. It's nothing against his talent and nothing against him as a person.
I just don't like him. Yeah.
Not my taste.
Yep.
You know?
All
right. Hey, Wayne.
Yeah?
Wayne.
Yeah?
What? Oh, sorry. Hey, what'd you think about the whole Brittany and approaching Gunner aspect that they've been doing?
I got a feeling they're going to drop that. It was just purely for that one scene where Sam Shaw goes on someone else. I really think that was just to set that up.
But they had a Brittany approach Gunner this week and ask Gunner to give Samuel Shaw her number and get him in touch with her.
Yeah, but that was before the Sam Shaw saying, I've got my eye on someone else, weren't it?
Oh, that's right. He had a thing this week where he said, I'm not interested in her, I'm interested in something else.
That's purely to set that one scene up. I might be wrong, but...
I hope not, because I think that adding those two elements of crazy together.
I was going to say crazy after crazy would be brilliant.
Exactly. It's that natural born killers. If you ever seen that movie, what was the other one with Steve Zahn and Mila Jovovich? It's the crazy people attract crazy people, and when you get them together, things just can go in any direction.
All right.
All right, Vamp, overall, what was the one highlight that you took away from Impact?
I mean, definitely the Kenny King was a highlight. The match, what was that match that I was talking about? Was it the Samuel Shaw match? No, it wasn't
the ladder
Samuel
match.
Shaw. No, it wasn't the ladder match. It was the match before. Maybe it was the Samuel Shaw. There was a match where the two guys looked almost exactly the same.
Gunner and Bram.
Oh my
Gunner
God!
Gunner versus Bram, where Samuel Shaw came in and
yes.
kind of screwed it up for Gunner.
Yes, I didn't even write it down because I was so confused of who was who. Because I know one of them
have
they look almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
They both have long, crazy. Scrawny hair. They're both white. The only difference is that one of them is super, super tattooed.
Yeah, that's Gunner. The thing that is key about that, and most people that follow Impact know this, Gunner has been billed as the guy as Mr. Intensity. He hulks up in the corner by slamming his head into the ring ropes and or into the turnbuckle, I should say, and he's Mr. Intensity, but he doesn't really fit that moniker that they've given him.
No.
So Bram comes in, and Bram, in every moment that he's been on Impact, has been the epitome of what an intense look or an intense feel. He brings about that charisma to him that you think this guy is batshit crazy. He could do anything at any given moment. So it was interesting to see the dynamic of what TNA has billed as Mr. Intensity versus what the fans see as Mr. Intensity.
Yeah, I mean, I was just a little confused because I was like, that they look a lot alike. I'm not sure if that's a really good idea or not. But, you know, I was just going with it. I'd like to see more of the X Division. I'd like to see the knockouts one-on-one instead of all together because I don't like Rumbles anyway. It's not my favorite, especially a girl. And there was a lot of bad moves in that. But that, I mean, that goes with the girl division. But I've heard you guys have propped up the knockouts so much that I expected better, and I shouldn't have. I should have just.
Yeah, this Battle Royal was not good because it put pretty much all the knockouts in there to try to fill time without giving them any real set direction or spots. And then at the same time, they're trying to make Havoc look dominant. So you don't really see them interacting with each other as much as just buying time until Havoc comes over there and does whatever spot that she's going to. But there's one part where Rebel, who's a brand new knockout, this was her first match, was not too long ago. This knockout Battle Royal was actually her second match. But she got thrown over the top. Havoc tossed her over the top, and you see her slam on steel steps, and she legit fractured her arm when she did that.
Oh, did
so
she?
It was interesting that they left it in and kept it in there because it showed that Havoc has this brutality where she can actually injure you without it actually looking like it was a careless word to green, because everybody said, oh, she's so green, Rebel shouldn't have been in the ring. But when you see it executed on television, it didn't look like she was green. It just looked like a bad landing coming off, you know, an elimination.
Yeah, I thought she might have gotten hurt when she fell out of the ring like that. I was like, oh, she fell on the damn steps. I was like, oh, that may have been.
The majority of knockouts that most people boast about are the individual one-on-one matches, not necessarily tag matches or these gimmick royals and stuff like that. It's the one-on-one encounters because they give the girls time to have a match that C-Man says, man, this was good. But it also showcases Gail Kim. That's the hands-down thing that makes the knockouts division go round. Like Taryn Terrell, you put her in a one-on-one match with Madison, it was good, better than, you know, say, Cameron versus Naomi. But at the same time, it's not near as good as AJ versus Paige. But you put Gail Kim in a match and let her go with Taryn Terrell, and arguably they are some of the Match of the Year candidates for TNA.
All right. So, yeah. So I'm going to watch tomorrow, and I'll give my report on Monday. I mean, Tuesday.
Was No Surrender better than Raw last week?
I can't answer that. I don't know anything was going on, so I can't say if it was better or worse or whatever. So I can't.
Which one did you prefer then?
I mean, I always prefer the stuff. I would, you know, not being biased, but I would prefer the thing that I know what's going on. You know, so I know what's going on with Raw.
Storyline over the action.
I mean, the there's matches I can take. I mean, there's obviously more matches on Raw than there was on TNA, but I can take both. I mean, I could take either one. I mean, there was good matches that I enjoyed. There was bad matches that I didn't like. I didn't like the Samoa Joe and Homicide match. I thought it was a waste of time, honestly.
Right.
The Battle Royal was not that good, but I really enjoyed the ladder match. I really enjoyed the Rude Lashley match. I enjoyed the Kenny King and the Chris Melendez match. So, you know, good or bad, I mean, I'd have to see a couple more just to see if I like it or not. Again, I don't know what's going on. So, you know, what's his name coming out and interrupting that match, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on yet, so I'll find out.
Following the stories is a big thing because, like, the X Division, you didn't know that Homicide won a number one contenders match, which is something that they overdo in TNA. I'll tell you right now, they overdo the number one contenders thing, which is part of that article I just wrote is about how to utilize the number one contenders match on a pay-per-view instead of doing it every other week on Impact.
Yeah, okay.
But Homicide had won a number one contenders match, so that's why he got in with Joe. But that entire match was building towards the James Storm attack. So that's one of the key things that I liked a lot, is because every aspect and every character in Impact has a defined story. From the mid-carders to the top of the card, not all the stories are great, but one thing you'll notice is that every character that you see isn't kind of lost in a shuffle like the Adam Roses of the world and Damian Sandow doing his thing until he got stuck with Miz. You'll see that Sammy Shaw has a defined character and a story that they're trying to tell. Bram and Magnus have a defined character that they're trying to tell a story with. So if you pay attention, you'll get to see these things, and the more and more you watch, you'll start understanding why the interactions that you see with Homicide and Samoa Joe is a big deal, because they used to have a big time rivalry back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm glad
you enjoyed what you got to see. And it's just like with me and Raw, there's some things on Raw that I don't like that other people do, and there's some things that I do. So it's an interesting take, and I'm glad you actually enjoyed it.
Always. Yeah, always. Always. All right, guys, so that's our take on TNA. We will talk to you guys next week.
I'm traveling on the route home. I'm just getting off work. But no, my whole thing is if there is an interest for a DSJMP TNA podcast, please tweet us and let us know if that interest is there. Because I've had several people ask me online if it's going to happen or not.
Yeah. All right, guys. If you want DRG to do a TNA podcast on the DSJNP network, I'm more than welcome to give him the time and the space to do it. Please tweet either me or DRG. It's at DevilVamp or at DSJNPCOM, DSJNPCOM, or it's Mr._DRG, right?
No.
Sorry.
MRDRG_WIR.
That's okay. That's what I forgot. I knew there was an underscore in there. And tweet him and let him know that you guys want a TNA podcast. Please let him know. We will do one. Not a problem. We'll do one. But if nobody listens, I'll cut it. I have no problem doing it. So let us know. I know I've gotten a couple, not that many, but if DRG has gotten more than me, then we'll definitely do one. So let us know on Twitter. Please, guys, let us know. All right.